Can we take photographs?
I don't see why not. Wow. I'm on.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, it's like we have everybody ready to go. Call this meeting to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Brian Gothrop. Bill Goggins.
Here.
Kelly Curtis.
Here.
John Kapler.
Here.
Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here. So, for tonight's meeting, we have council member reports and comments. We've got work program review, and then we've got an audience request opportunity, followed by a presentation on email archiving. Then we will be taking up the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center for some additional recommendations. And I think that's it. So with that, we don't have any, do we have any council member reports, comments? Anybody want to say something about the announced retirement of our liaison?
Yeah,
what the heck? We've driven another one away. Paul.
It's been fun.
All I can say is there better be a good party to celebrate this after all the years.
We'll have to throw it.
Well, maybe we can see.
I'll be free.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, anything on the work program that you want to bring up, Paul?
Yes, actually, I do. Pass this around. So last week, the City Council adopted the 2017-2019 Planning Work Program. I'm passing a copy of that around for your files and for your efforts next year. There are 9 categories, basically, and some of those involve the Houghton Community Council, some don't. There's really 2 different colors on the work program. The ones in blue represent typically zoning code amendments, neighborhood plans, comp plan updates, and they typically go to the Planning Commission, then the City Council, and they may or may not involve the Community Council, depending on the jurisdiction. The ones in green are typically staff-driven issues and don't normally come before a Planning Commission or City Council, but they do recognize there are certain things that we're working on in terms of the long-range planning projects. So the first category, I just kind of quickly run through this, the comprehensive plan has several subtasks. These include the annual city plan amendments, which we do update along with the capital facilities element. Sometimes you see that going forward. We have our citizen amendment request under task 1.2 that was broken down for staffing purposes. You saw some of those earlier, but none of these that were selected are in the community council jurisdiction, so all those are going forward, but to the Planning Commission and not the community council. Task 1.3 is an issue that's coming before the Puget Sound Regional Council is trying to look at whether downtown qualifies as an urban center. Right now, Totem Lake is an urban center. The Puget Sound Regional Council is developing a kind of criteria for establishing the designation of centers throughout the region. And once that's done, the City Council may consider downtown as an urban center under those various categories.
What's the significance of that, Paul?
It could be additional funding. You do have certain I guess targets perhaps to meet in terms of employment or housing numbers to qualify for urban center. But for Totem Lake, it's recognized these are the major growth centers for the region.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Under Task 2.0, these are neighborhood or business district plans. And, of course, some of you all are involved with this. We do have the Finn Hill Neighborhood Plan going on right now. That's taking up a lot of staff time. You may have heard about 2.2 and 2.3 a little bit. That's continuing on through probably midsummer, depending on the where we go. And then 2.4 is of interest, and that's the kind of coming up with a template or a neighborhood plan framework for how we do neighborhood plans in the future. We've been working with the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods and talking with the council subcommittee on that. So the idea is to create a more consistent approach and more expeditious manner in doing updates to neighborhood plans, because now they've been taking 2 to 3 years. We're trying to find a way to either expedite that or group them or somehow be a little quicker on those reviews. And then following that, at some point, either later this year or early next year, we'll be getting into the next round of neighborhood plans, and that has to be determined over the course of the next several months on which ones we take next. Task 3.0, a lot of effort in Tone Lake, and we have our project planner, Dorian Collins, on that. One is an enhancement plan looking at how do you create amenities, streetscape, wayfinding types of things to improve the appearance of Totem Lake. It's also part of a transportation analysis and on connectivity. Is that correct, Joel, on Totem Lake, the enhancement plan we're working on?
The enhancement plan is more about the, based on the current planning network that's out there, is the design of those streets, and
yes, okay,
the cross sections and design standards and stuff like right. that.
And then another task on updating the design guidelines for Twin Lake, particularly along the Cross Creek Corridor for that neighborhood. And then task four is a lot of times where the Houghton Community Council comes in. These are a number of different code amendments. 4.1, we keep a list of various amendments that we want to consider. They may correct a inconsistency or provide clarification or things that are of interest to the community. That will come before the Community Council sometime later this year. Interest in sign regulations. It's been an ongoing discussion with Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods and the City Council. We decided to break it, and you saw, remember, the content-neutral signs that came before you a while back. This is looking at temporary signs and in Phase 1, and then Phase 2, possibly a more broader look at the rest of the sign code. And then task 4.4, the zoning code charge to tables, that's really administrative formatting of the code from our current charts in commercial areas to more a table format. Under 5.0, we've finished up the critical areas ordinance, and we're just doing the implementation of that. 5.2 would be of interest to the Community Council, although most of the steep slopes landslide hazard areas are outside of Houghton, but there are a few within Houghton. So the idea is to look at our geohazards. We're doing a mapping program. We're working with the University of Washington on that. And then we'll have a look at our regulations to see if they need any tweaking to maybe follow some best management practices or best available science to deal with issues on slopes. And we do have some limited shoreline master program amendments that we want to consider. More cleanup, not really major policy issues there. 6.0, we're updating our housing strategy plan, and Kelly's on our advisory committee at this point. So we've had one meeting. We've got another one coming up. It's a good kickoff. We've got a broad, representation from the community, and I think it's going to be an interesting endeavor, and at some point we'll probably bring that back, the draft plan for the Community Council to look at down the road. And then the rest of those are really staff-driven tasks, urban forestry strategic plan implementation with our urban forester. We have a green team that works on environmental issues, and then we maintain our database, and some of us are involved in regional coordination efforts. So that's it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm.
Well, would the Northwest College master plan be on a different?
This doesn't deal with current planning or development projects. It's really the long-range major planning projects that are not related to a specific development, per se.
You wouldn't we're going to see anything on that?
I don't.
Okay.
You know, so, as I said to the City Council last Tuesday, good luck.
As I said to the City Council last Thursday, good luck.
Working on the Northwest?
Oh, yes, it's under review right now. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
I thought I saw something someplace.
Right. Yeah.
Good right. Good luck to you, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have any members of the audience who would care to address us?
Not on this.
No? Okay. So we have a special presentation from Deputy City Clerk Anya Mullen.
Good Good evening, council members, and thank you for
is
your
mic
time.
On?
I think so.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, thank you for your time tonight. This is some administrative housekeeping that we need to go through. So as a quick summary, in 2015 and 16, as part of the city work plan, we moved to email archiving because we had some storage and network traffic issues. We had a lot of staff demands on what they need to keep and what they can get rid of. We have public disclosure requests, and we also need to meet our retention requirements that are set by the state. We developed 11 what we're calling email buckets to have for the retention for email that has to be retained. We've deployed those to the city, and now we are wrapping up with the boards and commissions that have city emails. You're the community council with city email that we have issued you as an attempt to help you keep your city work separate from your personal work. And so I need to do a quick orientation on how we'd like you to manage those city emails that you have. So either today or tomorrow, IT will be deploying what we're calling the archive folders to your Outlook web access. So the next time that you log in, you may see these archive folders in your email box, your city email box. There's a handout at your table with a further description. I don't want to take up your meeting going through each one of these categories that describes what each one is. And the timelines are in part of the labels as an easy referral so that you know that the email will be kept like in the admin long-term category for 3 years from the date that the email originated. After that, the emails are automatically deleted. And so it will be important that you take the emails that you get and you move them into an appropriate folder. You can, if you have subfolders in your Outlook already, you can just move those over into the archive folders. I'll back up. And they'll just inherit those rules from the parent folders. Or if you have a lot of your email in your inbox, you'll need to move the ones that you want to keep. Once the emails pass its retention in that folder, it will be deleted. And once it's off of this, once it's been deleted from the system, it's no longer recoverable by IT. The other email folders that you have in your email system, your inbox, your sent items, and your deleted items are going to have a 90-day retention. So anything that's in your email box that comes into your email, if it's not moved into one of those project or those archive folders, after 90 days, it will be deleted. So anything you want to keep for longer than that should get moved into the appropriate archive folder. That won't happen immediately. We're informing you of this now, and the timeline on this is incorrect. I apologize. It's actually 2 months from today that those archive rules will come into place. We'll send out a reminder to your city emails in mid-May, and then the 90-day retention rules will be applied and become live on June 1st. There is contact information on the pamphlet that I gave you for the city clerk's office and for me specifically. So I encourage you, if you have any questions or if you want any help with this, please call me and I'm happy to set up a time to work with you directly. And then as a quick reminder, as far as the things to keep or delete, we put this together because this was one of the big questions we got from folks was, well, what do I have to keep? What can I get rid of? As a general guideline, if you're one of the main senders or you're one of the main recipients, you probably are going to want to keep that. If it's stored if it's stored elsewhere, or if the main purpose of the information is just FYI, heads up, that's not information you need to keep. Things like sale flyers, thank yous, birthdays, birth announcements, food announcements, you'd be surprised at how many of those are there are at City Hall. All of that can be deleted. So I'm running late to the meeting. I'll be there in 5 minutes. All of that we're not interested in keeping. And then just a couple of things about public disclosure. If we have an email that's been requested, we must provide it to the requester if it meets the parameters of the request. However, if you've deleted the email in accordance with our retention schedule, that's exactly what we want you to do. It's okay that we can't produce that email. That is the way that the whole system is structured. Email that was requested that we could have deleted but didn't, we now have to hold on to. We can't destroy it until we've satisfied that request. And if someone asks for an email, even if it's personal, like it came to your city email, it wasn't something that you wanted there, but you hadn't gotten around to deleting it, this is more of an issue for employees where birth announcements, as I referred to earlier, We will need to release it if it's responsive. And any questions? I know that's a lot, and I ran through it really quickly, but I didn't want to take up too much of your business meeting.
So, quick question. So, after the limit, if we haven't got anything that's over 90 days, it's just going to go?
Right. So, if you have a lot of stuff in your inbox and you don't feel like there's really anything in there that's worth moving in, it will take care of itself. But I would encourage you to go through it and make sure there's not, like, something that you feel it needs to be kept. But things like directions to a meeting or a conference or things like that, they'll just age out on their own. Okay. And then this is not specifically on your agenda, but Paul's letting me have a few more minutes of your time. I'm also coordinating the election item in November for the continuance of the Houghton Community Council. And so I wanted you to consider with the pro and con committees whether or not in the past you've just reviewed the materials and made your decisions as a group, but I wanted you to consider whether or not you wanted to do interviews of the pro and con committees once they've expressed their interest, or if you just want to review the materials and make the decision.
Any thoughts?
I believe we're coming to you for the June meeting, so that would probably be where your interviews would be.
Okay. We haven't in the past had in-person interviews for the pro and con committee. That doesn't mean it's not a good idea. Anybody?
That's are we going to, do we anticipate any issues this year where we need to change the way we've been doing things?
Well, no, it's just, I don't think that's the purpose. It's just giving us that alternative. You know, if you're trying to get the best people to be writing the pro statement for you, then you would, meeting them in person probably gives you a better chance than just looking at what they submit in writing. So
I don't see how it could be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yes, right?
Yeah. Plus, it gives us a chance to have some interaction.
Yeah, they
could
ask us questions or something.
Well, yeah. I think if you find that you don't get a lot of applicants for the pro and con committees, you could always change your mind. I mean, like, if it turns out, I think that might be part of why there hasn't been interviews in the past, is that there might not have been as much interest. But it's, I'd say that there's been a lot of interest in the Houghton area recently, and so you might get more, possibly. So you might get more interest in participating in either the pro or the con side.
Yeah. Okay. Thoughts?
It's my first rodeo, so I don't know.
Okay.
My only concern would be that you've got people volunteering their time to write this on our behalf, and now we're asking them to come and talk to us and spend even more time. And that's my only thought.
Well, we could just offer it, and if they don't want to, I suppose.
Isn't that how we did it in the past?
We have not interviewed people in person, but we could maybe just say, depending upon the number of applicants, we may choose to interview in person and then go from there. Keep that door open. Let them worry. So you guys think that's all right? So that if we only get two or three applicants, well, that's...
But if we get 100...
Well, and then we would narrow it down to, based on what they've submitted, maybe a half dozen that we interview and then
choose.
That would
be quite a bit of interest.
Yeah. Does that sound good?
That sounds good.
Let's do that.
Okay. Thank you.
And you have to be from Houghton to be on the committee,
yes,
right?
Yes, you do have to be from Houghton, and there is a limit of 3 and 3.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Actually, is that true? Because I remember people that weren't from Houghton being on the con committee in the past.
Yes, I remember that as well.
I'll have to check. I have all the information from King County at my desk, but not necessarily at the front of my
brain. Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
And I'll have lots of free time, so.
Which side are you on?
Yeah, which side are you going to be on?
Oh, no. I think it's a threat.
Oh, that
would be so eyes rolled. Did you see the eyes roll?
How many beers is it going to take? Strike that from the record. Okay, so let's move on to the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. Angela, do you want to talk to us?
So, if
if you remember, I don't remember the exact date, but the last time I was here, you gave me a list of things that you wanted to include in the new comp plan and zoning wording. I took that to the Planning Commission, and they responded to that list. And that's what's included in your packet this time is your original list in a slightly different order. I tried to organize it according to comp plan and zoning so you could see where the changes would occur and design guidelines.
Yeah.
But basically the things are listed, and then I highlighted what the Planning Commission had to say about each one. Either they agreed or they wanted some change.
Right.
And then as of today, we got a letter from some citizens, Anna Rising, trying to remember who signed it. Larry and Anna signed it. They're here. And so I passed those around to you because what they had written the original proposal that you commented on last time. So now we've got the original proposal with comments from the Planning Commission and comments from Larry and Anna on the Planning Commission comments. So I'm thinking maybe the way to do this is to just go through the list again. And you can tell me how you feel about it. If you agree or disagree, some things everybody agrees on, so those we can just go through quickly. And then there's the items that there isn't agreement on, and we could discuss. Does that sound good? I don't know really.
No, I think that's the best way format as any. And Paul, are you going to say something?
Well, also we'll be bringing back the specific code amendments at a later date. So we'll just give you direction right now, and we'll come back with the actual comp plan language and zoning code amendments for your consideration.
So the next meeting of the planning, so from here, then I would take your comments on their comments on, you know, and bring them back to them. What I'll be bringing to them at their meeting on May
11th
will be zoning and comp plan changes written according to what they told me at their last meeting. With that, I'll be sending a list of items that you want to be handled differently.
Okay.
And then they'll discuss that and come up with some conclusions, and then I will come back to you on May 22nd, May 15th. Right. Sorry. On May 15th. And, you know, we'll go from there. We're hoping we're going to get closer and closer to having some kind of an agreement on this.
Right.
If not, we'll just bring the two recommendations to the council, to City Council. That's also a possibility.
Okay.
So that's where we are. So do you want to read them, Rick, or do you want me to read them? How do you want to do it?
I'll what I'm thinking, again, in consideration of the, we just got this information from the neighbors, mm-hmm. but they obviously put a tremendous amount of time into it. Unless somebody disagrees, I'd kind of like to use that. Let's use that as our process.
Fine.
You know, it's going through, because then we're able to look at their comments, supporting their, you know, why they feel the way they do, and it's incorporating their thoughts into the process, and I think that's worthwhile.
Right, and as far as I can see, it's in the same order and everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think should work fine.
Yeah. What? Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay, I have a question before we go much further, since I'm the rookie. So, this will go to City Council.
No, this is going to Planning Commission.
Well, no, I mean, Angela walked us up to. Then we will have a plan that goes to City Council.
Right.
Then it comes back to us. Then we will either say yay or nay.
No.
Yeah.
We're refining what we're letting.
Okay, I'm walking through worst case scenario. Then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if we say nay, what happens then?
So what I think the way this is going to look, I'm not sure yet, is that we will have an ordinance for you for the Houghton side comp plan, an ordinance for the Houghton side zoning,
mm-hmm.
an ordinance for the design guidelines, an ordinance for the Everest side comp plan, and an ordinance for the Everest side zoning. The reason for that is you have the ability to, disallow your side.
Right.
So you would have control over two parts, the comp plan and the zoning for the Houghton side.
Okay.
And so if you disagree with either of both of those, then they, you have disapproval jurisdiction. So then they will not occur, and the zoning and the comp plan will remain as they are.
And then we end up starting this process?
No, it just, no. We're just, that's it.
Okay.
But, you know.
So in the unlikely event of a water landing, and that happens, because we don't want that to happen, there's still an issue with the existing comp plan and the existing zoning plan not matching.
Yeah.
So how does that get resolved?
Well, I don't know. But what I'm thinking, part of the reason that I'm saying that we would divide out the comp plan and the zoning is, it, again, we're hoping everybody agrees. But let's say you can come to agreement on the comp plan. I think you, Planning Commission and you, both say three stories. That's the big issue, right? So I think we can feel safe that that change will be okay. It's just, you have to agree with all the changes, though. But so it may be that the comp plan's okay and the zoning's not. I don't know. But
let's cross that bridge.
Yeah, I mean,
let's think positively, and then if
after
this all plays out, if we do have a impasse, then look and see whether what the Planning Commission has put forth for the comp plan modifications is acceptable to us.
That's right.
So
yeah. And then we'll have to go ahead. Maybe you have a better
Well, typically
answer.
Sometimes it's a back and forth between the community council and city council. So you know, to iron out any differences. Most of the time that works. Not always, but most of the time it does work that way.
Okay. I just need a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I wanted to start this off by maybe getting some consensus on guiding principles in the decision process. My thought, I have four things that I thought of, and then I welcome anybody else's input. The things that I think are worthy of being part of that is that we follow the existing neighborhood plan unless it has been clearly contradicted by the public input for this HNC process. And if it's been clear that there's a big dichotomy between the two, then we should probably follow the current input is the way I would propose. Second point, no downzoning. And that, I think, to me is, I do not think that it's appropriate to downzone from the existing zoning. I also feel like my personal feeling, I've stated before, is I don't think there should be upzoning unless there's a reasonably commensurate benefit to the neighborhood to offset the impacts of the upzoning. You know, there's got to be a trade-off. And so, and that could, you know, it's, that's a value judgment, but I think that we can't just be giving the upzone without something that's worthy.
And in your opinion, did you feel like that's what we did when we wrote our recommendations?
I think that was where we were trying to get to. Yeah, yeah. And then the last thing along what we were just talking about, if we don't agree with where the Planning Commission's at on something, is it important enough to us that we would actually veto it?
Right.
And so, you know, it's got to rise to the level this is so significant that we're willing to veto it. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to clearly communicate that to them because we don't want to get to that point. Right. And if they misread us and think, well, we'll give on it, no, we should be clear. This is too important for us to just let it go. So anybody else have any other guiding principles that you think we should be considering as we go through this? Anybody disagree with anything I said?
I disagree with those.
Those are good.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. So with that, let's start through the process.
Can I ask you a question? comments from the audience.
It's already happened.
No, you brushed right over it and went right to this woman from the city.
No, I asked.
You did not. And you brought her right up, and that was it.
He's right, Rick. When you said...
Do we have any... No, I said, do we have any...
The public hearing is...
The public hearing was closed to...
Except for written comments.
Yeah, oral, but written comments remained open.
Okay, but
that's not what it says on your agenda.
Those are comments from the audience about things other than this.
Yeah, if you're talking about commenting on the Hope Neighborhood Neighborhood Center, is that what you're speaking to?
Yeah,
that... The process that was agreed to was that written comments could be submitted, but oral comments, we had a public hearing, and so the oral comments were limited, or were after the public hearing, no further.
Says request from the audience.
Correct, yeah.
Limited to 5 minutes.
I understand.
You brought her up and gave her about 15 minutes while she was under special
I'm sorry for the, I'm sorry if you were confused and I can understand how you
I'm
got.
I'm not confused. Yeah. I hope you guys are, because there's no question how the community feels about this.
Oh, no. We understand that.
You got it.
Yeah. That's why our starting point is the community input that we received. So.
I have a question process-wise. Is the hearing still open for written comment? I thought it was supposed to close with the Planning Commission. Frankly, it's early.
In my opinion, it's somewhat arbitrary because this isn't a quasi-judicial matter. You know, it was, and I respect that they wanted to limit the oral testimony just in the interest of, not continuing with 100, comments every meeting. So, we've gotten a tremendous amount of input, but I think as this process proceeds, I don't think it's inappropriate to be considering their written comment in response to actions that are being taken and recommendations that are being made. It's, it's a legislative process. This isn't a quasi-judicial. So.
That's correct. I mean, people can always submit letters, and we've always passed those on to all bodies involved. So
just
make sure we're in process.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's take it from the top. And you know what, I'm just going to, anything that doesn't, when there's no disagreement, in other words, if you guys, as you look at this, what's in green, if the blue agrees and the green agrees, that means that the Planning Commission and the neighbors agree with our recommendation, and we're not going to take any time for that. So the first one where there is a difference is recommendation, page 3, the delete policy 5-4, allowing higher density on properties on the west side of 106th Avenue Northeast and south of Northeast 68th.
Now, is that the Waddell property?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And has he already submitted a...
He has submitted a short plat application.
Three short plats.
So he did that, as I understand it, to cover his bases in case the five stories was not approved. So I think what he has told you at numerous meetings is that if he couldn't do the five stories, it wasn't something that he was going to be able to do. And so then he would build single family homes. That's the way I understand it. But, I prefer him to talk for himself. But he has said that in the past.
Yep. So what we're really looking at here is if we went with the Planning Commission, even though he's indicated that he's moving forward with a single family development, we would be allowing, we'd be taking away the density limits. He'd still have the height limits of 30 feet, but there would be no maximum number of units per acre under the Planning Commission's recommendation. And what we would recommend is we just leave the zoning as is. As a practical matter, I don't know that... Well, I don't think this is something I would veto over because I don't think this practical matter is going to matter. But I'm open to comments.
So the Planning Commission said no additional height, keep it at the 3.
Yep.
But that he could have ultimate density. That's what.
Correct.
That's what
it would ultimately get down to coverage.
Has anybody looked at what that could be? What's the max?
Angela, what do you think that would result in? What's
30 feet?
I think for 30 feet we assume 38 units an acre, but that was with some mixed use.
No, this is just a residential zoning.
Yeah, it is residential.
In the other zoning district that had a 30-foot limit, I think we assumed 38 units an acre.
But we would have another floor, so maybe would you just...
Well, it says no additional height, right?
No additional height, correct.
So that's 30 feet.
Correct.
But there would be nothing, it would be potentially three stories of residential, see what I'm saying?
Do they have the parking? Wouldn't there be additional parking requirements?
They have to meet parking, yeah.
Yeah, they have to meet it. It might be, I don't know if it would be underground or not. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 units an acre.
And right now they have 24 units per acre, right? That's what their density is right now.
No.
No.
It's what they're built at, not what...
They're built at 19, and I think it's 12 is what it's zoned for.
Oh, they're built at 9, okay.
Yeah, 19, okay. So...
Do you know how big the site is? I'll do a quick math calculation.
That site? I could tell you, I think.
Yeah, the neighbors provided that background. Current zoning is 12 units per acre, although it's developed 19 per acre.
So maybe, and I'm assuming you're talking about not including the city property in this. I think that's
a separate issue. That's another, that's farther down.
It doesn't come up in this? Okay.
No, this is only
this is strictly the Waddell.
Oh, because it's comp plan. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
The Waddell property is 1.24 acres. And it's got 24 units. So it's, it's a little less than 20, I think.
Yep, I get about 34 units. I took the site square footage times the coverage. Took about 70% of that for buildings and roads and divided it by a minimum footprint of about 880 square feet to get a three-story building. Came up with 34.37 units is what I came up with. Okay. Now, I doubt very seriously you'd be able to achieve that because you got to work around stuff and arcs and roads and that sort of thing. But, I mean, if somebody was unbelievably clever, they might hit that. But
because the Meriwether property is 29 units, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I spoke my piece. Is this something you guys would veto the difference over?
Yes.
You would?
I think so.
Okay.
So we would... So we'd go along. What are you saying?
Are we telling the plan? No. I'm just saying I don't necessarily agree with it. I think it's a moot point. I don't think it's going to matter either way because I think it's pretty clear that he's unless he could get more than that, he wasn't going to do the multifamily. Mm-hmm. And I think that totally makes sense. I mean, if he's already got 24 units there, you're not going to tear down 24 units to rebuild 36. It just makes no sense.
No, but you got to look at this. He may just sell the whole property to somebody else.
Yeah.
Who brings in a bulldozer and...
It still has to, it has to make sense economically. You know, you're not, 24 units and that, I mean, you're talking a lot of money there. It's not, I don't know, Elsie.
So, Rick, the Planning Commission has no additional height. But unlimited density, but we're saying the unlimited density is in reality 34 units.
As a practical matter.
Is that what we're agreeing on, or are we going into the green?
Going into the?
The green.
Oh, well, that's the background. The neighbors are recommending that we stick with our original recommendation. And frankly, I prefer that. I support that. Mm-hmm. My only question is I'm going to that... thing. Is this something that, if this was the only issue, would we veto on this? Would we find this grounds to veto the total measure?
I want to put this aside, Rick, and let us go through everything and then come back and discuss this again because this is a big deal.
Is it to you? Okay.
I mean,
all right, we'll put that on hold. But I don't want to do too many on holds.
I need to correct something real quick because I went through the math in my head and I said, that's a lot. Wait a second. So I'm thinking it is going to be probably closer to 22 units. It's probably about the most we can get in there because coverage is 50%. And I must have fat-fingered.
I think the coverage is higher. Yeah.
What is coverage?
What do you say, Paul?
Coverage is higher. I think it's 70%.
70 or 80 from
multi. 70 or 80, but I don't know. Well, it's 8. It depends on if you change. You can make the coverage whatever you want. And under the RM zoning, the existing zoning,
I think the plan is coverage is 50%.
Wait, I can
You can go on. I can check.
Okay.
If it is 50%, I did a miscalculation somewhere, but I think it's 22 units, not 34.
All right.
You want to check that real quick, Jeff, going through your process and see which is... Okay, thank you.
Okay, next item is... And this is all under the comp plan amendments, you guys. Oh, go ahead, Angela.
Did you find it? Yeah, it's 80%.
80%.
So it would be 34. Let's see.
So they could have double the units that are there now.
No, there's 24 there now.
Double maybe what's allowed.
24 or 19.
Under existing zoning.
There's 19 per acre.
There's already
24
because
it's a 1.3.
So
24.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the existing density is above what's allowed by code.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So 10 more units.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be similar to what's currently in place in the BC zone because that's 30 feet with no density limit.
Where is it? Okay, wait a minute.
Are we?
So this is RM.
Okay, Elsie's asked us to put that on hold, so I'll honor that for this. Next item, Houghton Everest. What's that, John?
When are we going to come back to this?
I guess after Elsie's wanting to move on, and then maybe after the, or maybe, you know, maybe in the interest of getting this straight, I'd rather have one person veto this. Let's take a quick show of hands.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Angela.
It is 60%. I'm sorry.
60.
Okay, it's
what is it?
Even less.
60% lot coverage under current zoning.
Yeah, you can change that.
The type of zoning we're proposing was 80%, but I think, but
okay,
I mean,
well,
but
that's what should be. But that's what should. That's probably what Planning Commission intended.
Yeah.
That's
so
correct.
No,
that's
stick
correct.
With that.
Yeah, you're right.
Because that's really what that's they're. Correct. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so
60% is 25.
We're talking the difference of maybe they could have 10 more units, ballpark, if we went along with the Planning Commission's recommendation. Is that something that, raise your hand if that would be enough for you.
Acre?
No, it's total.
For the site.
For the site. So raise your hand if that would be enough for you to veto this. Okay, and we're going to just leave that one then. Next.
I might add that if we're not going to veto it, we might send a statement that says that we strongly disagree with this but won't veto over it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
is to not send them a message that we're okay with it.
My intent is to prepare a memo that will cover, you know, our position on this. We disagree, but it's not something that we would always do a veto.
So that's good, though, to let me know that, because I'll be doing that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I appreciate it if you tell me how you want me
we
to
disagree,
work.
We disagree, but we wouldn't disagree strongly enough to veto that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Just let the air out of everybody's tongue.
Okay, next, under goals CH7, it's they've added, the Planning Commission wanted to add support the transition of the Houghton Center into a, and we had pedestrian-oriented mixed-use development, and they want to add in transit and pedestrian-oriented mixed-use development.
How would that change anything? Would that trigger other, you know, like mandate other things? If it's a transit-oriented, does that mean all of a sudden there has to be more bus stops or anything? Or what would that change?
I think they just wanted to have that wording in there because we've talked a lot about transit and we're trying to get people out of the cars. So it was just an encouragement as I understood it. There's not going to be a regulation related to it or anything.
However, I got to chime in on this because I listened to all the testimony about this during the meeting. I disagree with this. A transit-oriented development is a completely different thing than a pedestrian-oriented development. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think they're saying transit because they wanted to get people out of their cars and encourage, encourage walking. However, in this whole process, we've not talked about transit at all. We've not talked about providing bus accommodations or even bus stops or working with Metro or parking for people to park there and park around. We haven't talked about that at all. And I think that this is completely misconstruing the whole idea of what the neighborhood plan was about this as a pedestrian-oriented place. Now, Paul and Angela, am I saying anything factually incorrect about what a transit-oriented development specifically is defined as?
I think that's why they didn't say just, they talked about that, calling it a transit-oriented and leaving out the pedestrian, and they were trying to include both. And that I think this conversation came up, didn't it? I remember us having this conversation. So they're trying to make it a pedestrian-oriented development, but they want to show the importance of transit. That's what I understood from them.
But what have we done in this to discuss and incorporate transit on other than
right? Well, with the Sixth Street Corridor study that was done, you know, in conjunction with this, and I believe Jeannie Acutenza gave a presentation on the concepts that were before the group and those that are being proposed, and those included the transit queue jump lanes in the northbound direction at Northwest University, and then at the 108th signal, 108th, 68th signal. So that was one of the, you know, transit concepts that was proposed. There's also, we discussed the idea of bus stop consolidation, places where maybe the stops could be spread out more. So there was some dialogue around how you could make the 255 and the other buses in the corridor work better as part of the suite of projects that were brought forward to the community council, to the neighborhood, and to the Transportation Commission.
But that, if I understand you right, that's talking about the corridor, and this is talking about the development. So saying, you know, so.
Is there some concern that transit is going to have a negative effect? Or like for example, I'm not following what the concern is here with being transit supportive or transit oriented.
Is the word transit opening up the whole thing to mean that inside the Houghton Center, between 106th and 108th and 68th, that they're thinking about putting some kind of transit thing in there?
No.
No.
Well, then that word should not be in there, because just we're not talking about the...
I think that this is muddying up a concept that didn't need to be inserted into here. I think that this policy, this goal was all about, this is a neighborhood center that people are going to walk to, and of course there's going to be buses. I don't think anybody thinks there's not going to be buses, but it just seemed like this adds an element that didn't need to be there. Now the neighborhood folks are saying that they agree with that, keeping that wording.
No.
And now they say no.
Well, I think it's just choosing your battles. Having said that, I mean, I think that we can strongly say we strongly disagree with this. Again, this maybe isn't something that we would veto over, but we really strongly disagree with the use of transit oriented. So, if that's what you're saying, let's put it to a vote.
But I also agree with the neighbors, where they're saying then we need to insert the Houghton Everest Center, because enlarges that.
And then you got to add Everest to every time you make a reference to Houghton Center.
If you look at page 125 of your packet, okay. The Houghton Center is a specific area that's in Houghton. That is not the Houghton Everest Center. That's the Houghton Center.
Yeah.
It is confusing because of the different names.
Yeah.
But that doesn't apply to that specific area in yellow.
Okay, so only the Houghton side would be considered the transit.
Correct.
You get what I'm talking about?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I thought you were talking about the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
I had the same thought that John did the other night.
I did too.
I think part of the intent, though, is that you could safely walk from the destination or if you were living in Houghton Center to transit. I mean, I think that's simply what it means.
But that's just already there. I mean, there's
but
already
not really.
Transit.
It's not a safe, walkable environment. I mean, all the policies talk about making it more pedestrian-oriented. That means, therefore, it's safer to access transit. That's really, at the simplest level, all it's intended to mean.
And additionally, part of it is that we, I think we heard that certainly the Houghton Everest Center is walkable for people within a quarter or a third of a mile. There's a great deal of Houghton that isn't within that walk shed, and there's concerns about access. Not that once again it's a large percentage, but there is the buses come frequently enough that one could choose to, you know, walk a couple blocks, hop on a 255, you know, ride from down near, you know, somebody, you know, a student in Northwest University or somebody that lives down near the south end of Houghton could jump on a bus, go up, get off the bus, and then, you know, avail themselves of what's at the center. And that's all that really transit-oriented. That was my sense of what was intended, and that's typically when we think about transit oriented. I think it's true. You could take it out or leave it in, and hopefully the result is the same. I think it's more about the intent of. I think what we heard to a degree was people. We wanted to move more people in the corridor, and you can do that by walking, biking, and taking the bus, whether you live in, you know. For folks in the area.
Right.
We have no control over the buses. I mean, we can have the word transit here or not, but that's not going to add more buses. So to me, this feels like a...
Actually, it does provide support to our transit plan that they can
look...
It does
what?
It does provide support to our transit planning by saying we're trying to accommodate land use and transit at the same time, so it could help in
transit.
So
it does have an effect. So having those words in there does have an effect.
Yeah, the whole system is set up to try to promote transit throughout the city. This has some of the best transit access in the city with the 255.
A lot of the transit planning is all around how people access transit, right? So in low-density areas, they will provide parking. But in denser mixed-use areas, the transit agencies will not provide parking. The primary access to transit is biking and walking. And so I think the intent of this was not to do, like, a true transit-oriented development like Orenco Station or Thornton Place in Seattle. And maybe the wording is a little misleading the way it's written, but... I think it's simply meant to just support access to transit. So you could potentially reword it to say pedestrian-oriented mixed-use development with access to transit or something like that.
I like that.
And then you're not sort of bringing in the other connotation, which
is the bigger development. I'm concerned that transit and pedestrian-oriented might be misconstrued as, oh, we should have drive-throughs because it says transit-oriented.
Oh.
Development, so that should be driving.
Okay, so I like that suggestion, and I got a sense of approval from you guys. So we're going to come back to the Planning Commission and say we would like to reword it so that it says support the transition of the Houghton Center into a pedestrian-oriented mixed-use development with access to transit, including retail with office.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. All right. So with that, and we aren't going to add Everest. We're not going to add Everest because then, okay. All right, next. The step up language, allow building heights to step up to 3 stories. Planning Commission didn't want to use the term step up and just allow building heights up to 3 stories if blah, blah, blah. And
that's the same, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's.
It's semantics, but there really is a distinction, and that's why they thought that it would be better to just word just allow building heights up to 3 stories, not step up to, because we've got other language that talks about the step back. So
yeah,
I think we're fine there,
and
I think we also got agreement with the neighbors on that. So you guys are good with that?
Yeah.
I want to bring up one comment, and that is. We're also defining the term stories with height.
And so I think there could be a potential issue, even with over a really long sloping topography, you might end up four stories tall on the downhill side, even though we step back and provide braking. It might technically be a four-story building. Now, staff has mentioned earlier that code would clean that up. However, I just don't want to have the public misconstrue the fact when they see something and they go, one, two, three, four stories, how can that be? Because we talked about three stories in the comp plan. So I just, from my standpoint, I want to make sure that as we move forward with this, that that definition is clear as we move from this language into code language.
You see a problem with that, Angela? You know what he's talking about. It's the topography.
I know what you're talking about. I just want to be sure I understand what you're saying. So are we back to in the actual regulation, you want to say three stories or 30 feet? Is that what you're saying?
He's concerned about having a difference between the...
That there being four stories in some part of the development, even though the comp plan says three stories.
Yes. Yeah.
Because as we get to the design guidelines, I think as we all sort of chatted, we want to be able to stand at the streetscape and see two stories, and then everything else steps back, however that happens. And this is really deep in the weeds and semantics with building code language and that sort of thing. And I just don't want people to say, gee whiz, I'm counting four levels and it says three. Because levels, stories, they all mean different things in the building code.
You guys all track, council members, you track what John's talking about, right? With the topography, okay, good. Do you see a problem with that, Angela?
I still don't know what you want me to
do.
I don't see a problem.
Do you think it would be a problem if the comp plan, it states allow building heights up to three stories, but then, as John says, that could actually translate into a place that looks like there's four levels in certain places within the...
I don't think so. Because what we would do, because you're limiting it to 30 feet, I think.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I think it should be fine.
Got it. Okay. Okay, the next one, we don't have any disagreeing. Let's see, do we?
Everybody, we.
Oh, no, light rail. Okay, we got spanked because we wanted to exclude light rail on the Cross Kirkland Corridor. And apparently that's in conflict with the overall goals of the comp plan and transportation master plan.
It does not say that. I didn't bring my book.
I think what we were saying was we understand that the city has goals for the trail, but in our neighborhood plan, that had been inserted, and we just wanted it uninserted.
Well, hang
so
on.
Find the original. Yeah, find our our neighborhood plan.
Right here.
Yeah, it's all the comp plan, and so your neighborhood plan then would not match with the rest of the comprehensive plan. That's what we're saying to you.
Alternative blah blah blah.
It's a citywide issue.
Yeah, but that's not about the Cross Kirkland Trail.
Well, the city's comp plan, you guys.
And it does not say anything about buses or anything else. It's just a straight little line. I wish I should have brought my book.
I just want to see, because remember, Angela, I brought that up and I said, because you had inserted that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
So, we were just saying uninsert that. Now, maybe it's true that somewhere else in the comp plan it talks about the Cross Kirkland Corridor having transit.
I think this was just a change in terminology. Joe, you might recall something just to be consistent with the way we describe it every place else. I wasn't trying to insert a new policy or a new approach, just rather just changing the wording. But I could be wrong. That's my understanding.
So this is the one where we were proposing to take light rail out, correct?
Yes, right.
And replace it with high capacity transit.
Yes.
Which is more a broader term that includes light rail and includes bus rapid transit, both under the umbrella of high capacity transit. Usually, what happens is that. If in a particular corridor, the goal of, and I think that this is the goal of Kirkland, is to have, you know, is to provide high capacity, support high capacity transit, but, you know, it's more mode neutral as to whether, you know, how and what form that high capacity transit comes.
Unfortunately, I think gathering all the definitions into one sort of global definition, Joel, doesn't really allow us to make a distinction between them. And our council in the past has sent a message to the city council that we didn't want light rail on the trail. And so by making this now this group collecting all of it, we don't have the opportunity to distinguish out that possibly rapid bus transit is okay and rail's not. And so because we did send a message to the city council that we would not like trail or rails on the trail.
In the interest of time, I agree with everything that's being said, but is anybody here prepared to veto over this? You would.
I would.
You would.
I would.
Even realizing that nobody, including the city, has any control over that corridor.
I appreciate
it's
that, Rick,
freaking but sound you, transit that controls
I understand, but, you know, you have to make a stand somewhere.
Okay. You know. Anybody else that would veto on this particular item? Okay. We don't like it, but we aren't going to veto over it. Next. Let's see. The preserving public scenic views and view corridors of Lake Washington, Seattle, and Olympic Mountains. And the Planning Commission said this is necessary. Policy 15.1 already addresses this. The neighbors would like to see a little expanded discussion saying apply design review to preserve and enhance the view corridors along Northeast 68th with the Hope Nevers Neighborhood Center to assure buildings, landscaping, and streetscape features do not adversely affect the existing views and public spaces are oriented to take advantage of the views. Which all sounds like a design guideline matter rather than changing. I could see that being more in design guidelines because we've already got 15.1 addressing the views. So I don't necessarily disagree with the Planning Commission as long as the design guidelines clearly incorporate this language.
Something like this in a design guideline.
I think that's the place to put it.
So I can put that in there.
You guys
way.
Good with that?
Yeah.
Excellent. Just to clarify, we're just really talking about public views. These are not dealing with private views.
Correct.
So. Right, oh. Correct.
Yeah. All right, moving along. Affordable housing. The policy to retain the existing affordable housing on the city-owned properties. The city-owned, what they bought from Doug Waddell. Planning Commission said it's not appropriate for a policy, but should be mentioned in a transmittal memo to the City Council. And although the neighbors say this language should be part of the discussion in the Houghton Neighborhood Center plan, even if a policy isn't needed, we want to see it. It'll just get forgotten if it's in a transmittal letter. That's our concern. Thoughts? Anybody else?
What do they mean it's not appropriate for policy? I don't understand why they say it's not appropriate. Is that not appropriate for policy?
I think it's more of a financial issue.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So it's really budgetary and how do you spend your tax dollars, and maybe it's something that could come out of the housing strategy plan, for example, as a implementation approach to the city, look at city-owned properties and try to develop affordable housing or... I think that was the basic premise behind their discussion.
And so the thinking about putting it in the cover memo was to just get the point across
that
you're interested in doing that. You want them to think about it. I don't think it will get lost. I think they will hear that, but it's up to you.
Well, and the point being, rather than being a policy, this is a specific transit, specific property that it's just a financial decision, like Paul said. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, so... I don't know if that's really a policy. It's a...
Yeah.
One question I had on this particular parcel is we had a discussion in our last meeting about keep the existing housing. Everything's got a shelf life, right? And right now it provides a service, but there's going to be a time when that housing stock really is no longer viable and needs to be completely renovated or replaced. So when that, I think we need to look at what happens when that happens. And next door, we just decided to go with the Planning Commission that, you know, there's no density limit. Although on this particular property, there's a transition zone to the single-family neighborhood to the south, which is much less. So it seems to me that because of that, that it ought be more than a memo. I really think we need to somehow protect the single-family neighborhood and create that transition zone as a policy or something stronger than a memo.
Well, the zoning would do that.
Well, yeah,
it?
You can. I think everybody agrees to leave the zoning.
Yeah, leaving
as
the
is.
Zoning accomplishes
so,
that.
So yeah.
For the transition.
If we just leave it as the RM 3.6.
Yeah.
Which is.
Then that's a transition zone because it will have less density.
Okay.
But that doesn't protect it from getting developed as more expensive housing. But right. It you know so it protects the density. It does not protect the price of the units.
So are we good with, go ahead, John.
Although since it is city-owned property and the city, there's some issues with the city selling property for a profit or something. How would that actually work? Joe, you're shaking your head no. Is that, am I wrong on that?
We sell property at a profit. You can't give it away.
Yeah, you just can't give it away.
Right. You can't give it away. It's a gift of public funds.
You have to give, market value.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
You can contract with an
Right,
so I'm fine.
We're going to go with the Planning Commission.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll strongly state our strong desire to retain that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think Kelly can carry that forward to the housing strategy
Absolutely.
Plan discussion
Absolutely. There's our advocate right there. Okay. Policy to protect 106th Avenue for residential use by implementing traffic calming and discouraging commercial through traffic. And the Planning Commission said, not appropriate for a policy. And so then the response from the neighbors is that we should include design elements and signing to better delineate the higher density residential and commercial areas from the lower density single family residential areas. Is that something that could be incorporated into design guidelines if it affects areas outside of the neighborhood center?
It's not normally.
Go ahead.
That's all I was going to say.
I mean,
not normally something we would do.
Or is there? Is
well, from my standpoint, I disagree with the Planning Commission. I think we need to do something pretty discouraging here to prevent the through traffic from using this as a cut through road because this isn't just. You know, Houghton and people going to the neighborhood center. This is people driving to Bothell using this as their highway. Mm-hmm. And they're cutting through the neighborhoods to drive through our city to get to their neighborhoods. And I think we really, really need to discourage that. And I don't know if it can somehow go in the traffic plan. But I think it needs to be... I think it needs to be a very, very important piece of this development.
And I guess what I'm saying is it's not a design guideline. I mean, I don't know where
it
goes.
It should be in the neighborhood plan, shouldn't it?
You know, we have similar policies in other neighborhood plans.
Yeah.
It's a general statement that you want to discourage through traffic within neighborhoods or try to traffic calm certain things. So I think I probably disagree with John. It could be a general policy that talks about that. I don't know if you get into all the specifics of the design elements and the curb cuts and the bulbs and everything like that, but I think as a general policy to discourage that type of traffic in neighborhoods from commercial is
we're talking
generally
about
appropriate.
We already have
this,
that, don't we?
Yeah,
we
do.
In this center, this Houghton neighborhood center, and so maybe you say it's not the people from Bothell. It's just like how to discourage,
right?
You know, people from toing and froming that place. And particularly, I think the commercial trucks, you know, to keep them off of.
Well, in Goal 9, when we talk about Northwest University, we talk about a 9.4 traffic should be routed away from the
there any reason we couldn't?
I think we can come up with some language based on, you know, implementing traffic calming or discouraging commercial traffic, something like that would be a federal general.
Could you do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, so a more general policy suggested.
No, it's specific to that street and the impacts from the neighborhood center.
Yeah, and that's we've done that in another neighborhood as well.
Yeah. So we're not agreeing with the Planning Commission. We're going to get something specific in the neighborhood plan.
Well, you can ask the question, are we going to veto over this if they...
They're not going to buckle on. They're not going to test us on this one.
That's my sense, too.
We're just going to make that change. Okay. Next. Adopt new policy that supports the following specific improvements. These are the various suggestions of the right-hand turn lane, wider sidewalks, consolidated driveways, synchronized signals, investments in bus priority technology, implementation of ITS upgrades, and monitoring of the HNC and transit parking. So Planning Commission said not appropriate for a policy, but include bullet points 2 and 3 in the design guidelines, and the other bullet points are discussed in the 6th Street Corridor Study was their response. And the neighbors are saying that adding the list of these improvements would strengthen the existing neighborhood plan policy 5.3 transportation improvements, and it also direction for the city to implement transportation projects that address existing and future safety and operational issues. So associated with
HNC. We can't specify some of these things. Like, we can't specify a turn lane that would take out Menchie's, right?
Because
that's what they said, right? Didn't you guys say that the right turn lane would have to go right through their property?
Yeah. Larry totally has spoken extensively about if there isn't some comprehensive plan for the redevelopment of that area, of the transportation elements, which includes that right turn, that's the only item that's really going to significantly improve the traffic that you can do feasibly. Is that right-hand turn lane. But if there isn't anything in place that requires it or is going to incentivize people to do it, in other words, you can't get higher development unless you address these issues. That's what he's trying to do, is get something firm that we can force these improvements on. And I don't know, this is... Joel?
and the city's intent is that based on the results, so, you know, the idea was to do these, you know, the 6th Street Corridor Study and this in parallel.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're now at a point where it's kind of like one needs to kind of go to a certain point before we can, and I think what we've decided is the center have some guidance around exactly like what land use we're doing there, because what goes in on the transportation side somewhat responds to what the land use is. Like we've talked about, we probably wouldn't, do quite as much, quite as wide as 68th, because the buildings get shorter and things like that. But once we're done with this, what we would do is finalize the 6th Street Corridor Study, ultimately, you know, recommend the right turn lane and things like that would go forward and be rolled into the transportation master plan as part of its 20-year plan list and that kind of thing. So we could condition development if and when it happened and things like that based on that plan.
How do you condition development?
Well,
what's the mechanism?
So the mechanism we typically do to do that is that we look to our long-range plan and say this... For example, this right turn lane is in our long-range plan, our 20-year plan, either on the funded list or unfunded list. It's a frontage improvement to your development, typically, or maybe your impacts in the area are great enough that we're requiring you to do this improvement off of our plan.
Okay, so as a practical matter, that affects one of the smaller parcels in the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. The biggest impacts are from other parcels that aren't part of that. So how do you make it, how do you implement it with that scenario?
What would likely happen is that it would become a city project because unless you had a development that impacts were significant that you could require them to do a project of that scale, they would pay impact fees, and at some point the city could come along and do that as a city-led project where we would, you know, cobble together the money to do that. You know, the difficulty is that the impacts of that right turn lane on the existing development there make that particular, you know, capacity expansion pretty difficult, because you take probably enough, you have to purchase enough of that parking lot that you probably make the site, you end up buying the whole site.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the only way to eventually get anything, you know, in my experience, is you have to get on the plan first, and then you start to look for opportunities. If it's not on, you know, it's not in our long range plan, we don't have some place to point to it to go from, and that's typically, you know, it may take a lot, you know, some of these things take a long time, but it's amazing how someday they actually get done too.
Yeah.
If it's on the long range plan with no date assigned, does that kind of put on notice that this is really what is going to happen when anything gets developed around that corner, you know? So, and then would a small parcel that normally wouldn't trigger SEPA and trigger all that sort of thing, would it automatically trigger it?
So those are the kinds of things where, you know, if, say, Menchie's was going to redevelop, and under this scenario it would be if they were to redevelop on their own, you know, it becomes a pretty challenging site. But if they were, we would probably not be able to require them to build the right turn lane, because the improvement is, you know, out of scale. But what we would likely do is say, hey, you know, you can redevelop your project, but you have to dedicate the right of way. And you can't, like, build over the top of where we want to put the right turn lane. Or maybe even you don't get them to dedicate the right of way, but you work out some kind of agreement where they can't put their building there, and when the city comes back in the future, we're going to, you know, there's some sort of agreement where we would get that property or something like that. Those are the kinds of things. But that's only can happen is if it's on our long-range plan.
But that long-range plan is the transportation plan,
yes.
Not the comprehensive plan.
Right.
That's what he's talking about.
I understand. Paul, you were about to say something.
Well, I think what the Planning Commission talked about is that rather than listing all the improvements in here in the comp plan, you reference back to the 6 feet corridor study and say implement the transportation improvements as outlined in the 6 feet corridor study. Yeah. Then you have that full list of or menu of things to choose from to put into your capital improvement program and to identify funding. So, I mean, that was the option I think that the Planning Commission was interested in.
I didn't list it that way, but I will. Yeah. I can do that if that's the way you want to do it.
Yeah.
How do we not lose sight of this? I mean, I just see it kind of vaporizing in the weeds.
By the policy that would reference the 6th Street corridor study as a policy in the neighborhood plan.
And then making sure all this information gets in the 6th Street corridor study?
It's in there.
Yeah, it's
well,
in there.
It isn't. And can we state that this as a condition for our approval, that this is incorporated in the 6th Street corridor study?
That this being...
These specific improvements?
Yes.
Is there anything on there that you would have a problem incorporating into the 6th
no,
Street corridor?
No, all these things are part of the 6th Street corridor study.
So we could state that as...
Correct me if I'm wrong, Larry.
Well, I'm not sure if all the specific curb cut things are on 68 or anything.
Oh, I was looking at the list, the bulleted.
It's like three pages.
Yeah.
The
green. I doubt those are all included.
Yeah, that would be very unusual to put into a neighborhood plan, all this this type of detail.
Yeah.
The primary purpose was we haven't seen any recommendations from the 6th Street corridor study, so plan to go through without having some commitment to that.
Yeah.
So at least the bullet point items, you could see those all being, we could get some assurance that those are incorporated in the 6th Street corridor study.
All of those have been incorporated into, you know, the present, everything we've dealt, you know, done up to this point includes those items.
And there's no controversy or nobody's
correct
challenging that. Okay.
Yeah.
And The other thing that Larry has talked about previously is some way to trigger when redevelopment occurs on a site other than the Menchie site, how to get them to contribute to that right turn lane project, because they're the ones that are creating the impacts. How do you get that?
So what we have, they would pay transportation impact fees, and those would not be directly allocated to the right turn lane, but that's how they would pay their fair share of the cost of growth in the community.
And those are calculated based upon the projected traffic that they generate?
The direct projected number of person trips that they produce.
Okay. So based upon, I mean, just in the big picture, is collectively what we're talking about for development of the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center going to come anywhere near paying for what it would cost to get that right turn lane?
Yeah, I really...
No idea?
Yeah, I don't know. No.
My guess is no.
Probably not. But, you know, it's likely that there would be a funding. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could get to that project, but it's going to be an expensive project.
Right. Okay. So, where are we at on this, you guys?
I agree with the Planning Commission because I think that these things are addressed in the 6th Street corridor. I think we've talked about making sure they get into long-range transportation goals and... So it looks like there's funding mechanisms already set up for these sorts of things. I mean, it's not on our side of the street even, so it's like we...
No, it still impacts the traffic in our neighborhood.
Right, but I mean, we don't have...
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have control of
it. Right. Okay, so anybody disagree with...
No, but didn't you say something about putting a bullet in here about mentioning the 6th Street corridor study?
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Okay. Okay, now we get to the big gorilla. Established density limits in Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center, 1 and 3 zones at 18 to 24 units per acre. There's currently no limit except as determined by height and bulk of buildings in the BC zone. Planning Commission response, no density limits in HENC 1 or 3 and no FAR. The recommendation from the neighbors is establish density units for HNC 1 and 3 at 24 dwelling units per acre.
So let me ask, when you did the tables that talked about modest growth, and you talked about the density, the number of apartments or whatever, if it was the current zoning, the modest. Okay, so... Were there density limits in that modest zoning? Is that?
No.
Okay.
There was a density assumption of what could be built.
Okay.
But we did not assume density limits. There's no density limits
so
now.
So those numbers, and now that, if, for example, those numbers were about, it was like 300 and something, 390, something like that.
For modest growth?
Yeah.
Or is that what we're... Jeff will get it for you.
It was, yeah, it was like, it seemed like it was in the 300 to 400 range.
Yeah, current zoning, 360.
360.
And that's assuming all of the properties on page 30 of your big binder.
Yeah, and that was assuming that everybody was...
All of those redeveloped.
All of those, and... Yeah. So
all
it would,
just the ones in blue.
All the ones in blue.
Yeah. Which is most of them.
Which is most of them under Exhibit 11.
And under current zoning,
they
could still go up to that, right? Because under current,
right.
Yeah,
there is
so,
no density
I mean,
limit
I,
under
I,
current zoning.
I think
zoning.
One of your questions is whether this would violate your guiding principle number one, which is not to downzone.
Right.
Or to whatever.
Yeah.
That's number two.
Yeah.
No, I mean, because under current zoning, you can also go up to...
That's correct.
Right.
Same
and
thing.
And you can see how much has been developed.
Yeah. So it seems like we should back away from this one, right? Because that would be down zoning.
It could be argued that. So, I mean, legally you can change zoning, but there's also a risk that it could be challenged if you take away certain rights that people think they have vested or accrued.
Thoughts?
Because we're talking about the Everest side of 68.
No, no, no. We are talking about the...
That's not where we are. We're at this...
We're looking at there. Okay, I'm just looking at what the...
Zones 1 and 3, that includes both, you know, zoned 1, both sides. But really, it comes down to whether or not we are going to agree with the Planning Commission there should be no density limits, or we impose density limits, either the 24 units that we originally recommended or some other form of density limits. It could be a FAR, it could be, you know, any number of things. There's a great amount of discussion with the neighbors have provided.
But see, my point is that what they have now is the same. I mean, the same. But if you look at what's allowable under zoning on that table, right, under Comprehensive Plan 2035?
Yeah, the assumption that...
30 feet to 35
feet. Right, but Zone 3 isn't going to go to 35 feet.
What's your question?
Huh?
There is not a density limit now.
There's not a density limit now. And the 35 feet would only be for areas that had a grocery store. Isn't that what we stipulated, or has that been changed?
No, that was our recommendation, that we don't allow, we only allow it for the sites.
Planning changed that later, though, to the whole site.
Oh.
Well, no, we didn't specify whether it was just the site of the grocery store structure or not. We said 35 feet if they incorporate, and then one thing that came out of the Planning Commission discussion, which I wasn't aware of, is that 35 feet doesn't accommodate two stories above a grocery store, because grocery stores require that. I wasn't clear on that you really aren't giving them any right. additional size going at 35 feet. You're still getting two total of two stories, retail plus one story above, so you haven't really given them anything.
No.
Well, all depending on how the site's manipulated to get the base level in relation to the average building grade. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and depending on whether it's all buildings on the site or just the building that has the use in it.
Right. There's lots of ifs and conditions there.
Where are you guys at on this? Bill, you've been really quiet. Let's just go around the circle here and give me your feelings.
Well, I don't want to downzone. At the same time, if we're going to allow them to go up, is it going to be...
You need to be speaking into the mic. I don't think they're hearing you.
If we allow them to go up to 35 feet, what are we giving them, and should we put a restriction on it?
That's the question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it wouldn't be an incentive if it came with another restriction. Right.
Can you speak that?
Sorry, I was going to say it might be contrary to an incentive to then apply another restriction. If the incentive is another 5 feet, but then you're going to give them another restriction, then it's maybe not an incentive.
You know I think we've discussed that we could, that could be a condition for the affordable housing and other things that we can apply condition if we're going to give them extra height, additional potential development.
Right, but you're saying we're giving that to you because you're giving us a grocery store, and then you're saying, and we're going to take away.
Oh, in other words, but we're not going to let you have as much total development.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, what if the potential development is still a significant increase over what the 30-foot height's allowed? And I think that's what the neighbors are saying is, you know, it's one thing to give them additional development, but what if it's five times as much development? You know,
We
really need to know what the numbers are.
It's really in that realm.
Well, the simple presentation that you sent Jeff showed the FAR increase from 1.3 to 2.0 on the going to BC zoning existing versus the BC zone 35 feet. Right?
Right. But
so that's a 50% increase in density.
Sure, I get that part, but that also comes with, in order to achieve that under the current proposal, you have to provide some a community benefit like a preferred use. So, therefore, you're only doing that under certain situations because you want to have those uses retained. And I just would caution against adding another restriction on that because it would make the incentive less attractive.
Well, going to guiding principle number three, no upzoning unless there is a reasonably commensurate benefit to the neighborhood to offset the impacts of the upzoning.
But is this an upzone?
No.
It's currently the way.
Well,
this is currently.
No. That's what we're talking about. If we're going to allow them more density, greater heights, then that impact that we're talking more traffic and other impacts. If they're going to get that, then we want to have benefits in terms of X. You know.
Right. So you could look to apply additional benefits or require additional benefits. But again, I would just, if you're giving them incentive and then taking it away, then it's just not an incentive.
Well, you're being very simplistic about it, Jeff. With all due respect, I mean, there's a level at which does balance.
Well,
there's a level at which it's not worth it.
And I think it's hard in this group to actually get that relationship right. That's my only point, is we did a lot of fairly detailed analysis on this, and we unfortunately can't go back and test in detail each little tweak to this. So I'm not recommending not doing it. I'm just saying that if you give the additional 5 feet because you want something in return, that should be it should serve as an incentive then and not have another disincentive in terms of a cap.
But maybe another way to look at it is if you don't get a grocery store, hardware store, or drugstore, you're at 30 feet.
Yeah.
Right now at 30 feet, they don't have a density limit.
Right.
If you put a density limit on it and they don't supply one of those stores, then you are allowing less than you did before.
Got it.
And we're not meeting the fundamental principle of the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan is to provide services for the community. I mean, that's the focus of the plan, is to provide services
that's
for the community,
not a
housing project.
It's one,
So.
The only point being that there's a continuum, and it's just going from a 1.3 FAR, what it could be built out to now, you know, maybe increasing that to 1.5 is enough, or 1.7. I'm not sure exactly what the number is, but there, it shouldn't just be unlimited. We shouldn't just say you can put anything you want out there. I think there's a difference between that and saying, okay, if the most they could get is 1.3 FAR, then maybe, you know, it's
well, the 1.3 is just an assumption.
It's an assumption.
It's not a requirement or a regulation.
But the FAR is one means of limiting how much is built.
I mean, the only way they get to that impacts. Is with structured parking. So with surface parking, they'd never get to that level that they are.
Got it.
So
got it.
Just another factor.
So you said it was all above ground parking?
No.
No. So, I don't know how they would do that.
Okay, I've got some input from Bill. Kelly? Sorry, Kelly.
Redheads. I'm passing.
Passing.
I don't want a down zone, so that's where I am.
I know what you're looking at, eh? But currently it's 18 to 24, right?
No, currently there's no limit.
No limit currently.
That's what we were asking for. Okay.
Yeah, right now there's no density. It's limited by the height and bulk of the building currently under current zoning.
So if we did limit it to 24 units, how many units total would be on the site?
It's so hard to tell, and because this would be big building stuff. This is, oh man.
I don't want to see a whole bunch of apartments and no place to go and get a pop or potatoes or
that's not going to happen. This is only they would only get this if they.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not the way this is going to develop. I don't think. And part of this incentive was having the grocery store and having a cleaner and having a cocktail.
Nice.
So, yeah, right. And so we're worried that if we put limits on the housing above and beyond what there is now, that would be a disincentive for developers to
keep what's there.
Yeah. That's.
So how do we come up with the 18 to 24?
I don't know what I'm talking
about. We don't even know what that means to the whole site, and how do we know that's a good number?
We're not asking you, but you might explain 18 to 24 is the medium zoning thing, and that's straight out of the code.
Yes, 18 to 24 is medium density, and John, at the last meeting, if I remember, said, I would like to see medium density there, therefore I would like to see 18 to 24 units per acre.
So that's typical for just a residential zoning or a multifamily, not for a business center, a neighborhood center, or a commercial area. So
does it have to be 1 and 3? I mean, could we like say, yeah, it's appropriate for 3 to be medium density, but 1. Because they're getting.
You can say that for sure. I don't know what the difference is. They're both mixed use areas. They're both in the business district, and they both now have unlimited density. So, okay. There's nothing different about those two areas. If you want to make them different, you can.
John.
So, first of all, I made a mistake in our last meeting, and I didn't realize that the BN zone was unlimited in its residential zone. In thinking about this and our sort of governing principles, the four items that Rick listed out, I'd like to ask staff and for us to chat about the possibility of, if we give a bonus, that we limit so they could use the bonus in height to do some other things, possibly with a grocery store and some of the other uses, but limit the residential. If they don't use the height exemption and stay at the 30 feet, essentially we keep, so we don't down the zone, we keep the density unlimited, so the bulk and mass of the building would simply limit it. That would give the people that own the property the option of looking at which use is best. Understand that if there's if they upzone and go higher and we add in the affordable housing unit, the affordable housing percentages need to be within 10% of a number. So probably what would happen is you'd have very, very large expensive market rate units because the numbers are so few. One of the market rate units would be a little unit and somebody would get an absolute windfall. And then the affordable housing units would be 10% of that smallest market rate unit. That's probably what's going to happen. So we don't meet one of the other goals about providing diversity and more cost-effective housing. And so I'm just thinking that I looked at a way of trying to analyze parking for smaller units because there's less people in them, and some of those units people don't have cars, and larger units, and trying to understand where the balance is. And when I chatted with Rick about this earlier, and we thought, well, it's probably going to end up about the same. It could end up more parking and more cars for the smaller units. Yeah. So I don't necessarily like that. However, I don't like more taking property rights away from people. So, is there a way to have an if they don't use the height limit and they stay at 30 feet,
stay with the zoning like it is now. If they use that bonus to get more height to do some of the other stuff, then the density changes for the residential component. Have you ever seen that before, Jeff, in other places?
Well, it would be hard. No, I haven't. But it would be hard if the base zoning didn't have any cap on it, because you'd have to then somehow quantify that extra story in terms of the number of units that could be allowed.
Say that again.
Well, so your base 30 feet, right, you're saying there's no cap. And if you go up another 5 feet and you get another story, then there would be a cap?
That's what I thought I heard.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I said.
Yeah, I have not seen that. I would imagine it might be possible, but I'd have to give it some more thought.
Is there any downsides that you all are seeing?
Why would somebody do that in terms of a developer or a property owner? I mean, why would they limit?
I think it all depends on, you know, how things and where things fit. And
right. I think the 5 feet is not much of an incentive to begin with. I think the density is really a major issue that they probably have more concern about than the height.
Again, you're saying you only get the height if you put in a grocery store, for example. And then if you do that, we'll give you the height, but then we're going to limit how many residential units you can have. Why would they do that? I mean, why would they go to the trouble to find a grocery store and then they wouldn't get as many residential units? To me, it we can do it. We can write it if you want it. I just don't see the incentive.
No, you're right. Yeah.
I'm also sitting here thinking if we craft what John said, the Planning Commission is going to turn around and go and throw it out again.
Well, especially since they said no density.
That's that's good.
Thanks for looking ahead.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, the other side of that is, are we prepared to say
right, go back to that willing to veto?
If we have no limits on density, then are we willing to approve anything?
I'm failing to understand, because under current zoning, they can have 360 units. And under modest growth, which is what we are approving, they can have 360 units. So I think I don't quite understand
574.
574?
Yeah, it's
okay. Yeah, in the whole, we're talking about the entire Colton Narrows Neighborhood Center, the entire,
right.
Yeah.
The entire one. But Waddell is already not doing five story. I mean, that's already not. Okay, that's
the apples to apples. I mean, it's apples just. Apples, yeah. If he's not, it's not changing the differential.
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Please, Angela.
One thing is, you are not suggesting that a certain number of units be approved. So that is an estimate of how many units you could get if that whole development developed at that.
At one time. Yeah.
At one time, you know.
Yeah.
But what you're saying now, it's not the same as that modest proposal. What you're saying is, if a site, which wouldn't be that whole development, it would be a site develops with a grocery store, hardware store or drugstore, you can have 35 feet on that site.
Right.
So it's not quite the same. It's somewhere in the middle. I don't know where it is,
okay,
because I don't know what site would develop with one of those.
There's really only two that are likely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just as a point of reference, I drove by there this afternoon. I'm going to bet that the top cornice of the project right now, above the where the basement is in the grocery store, that top piece, I'm going to bet that's really at the height limit, the 30-foot height limit, based on how that building's calculated.
Yeah.
I'll bet it's right at it.
Yeah, at Met Market? Yeah, you're probably right.
Just
from the plaza.
I mean, that's the 30-foot height limit.
Yeah.
So the building that's there right now can't get any taller. To cram more stuff in there, it's got to go down.
Well, they could knock that cornice thing off and put
the boards in front of it. And
all right, enough. Let's where are you at on this, John?
This is so difficult because while I don't want to downzone, I don't want to upzone in such a way that we don't get a tremendous benefit for what's happening. And the traffic issues that we've heard from the citizens is so overwhelming in that they don't want additional traffic. I think if we allow a height limit, we somehow need to limit the number of residential units. But I don't think 24 is really enough. I just don't think it's enough. Because we'll end up with what we really, the neighborhood plan says, you know, a diversity of stuff, and there'll be really nice high-end apartments there.
Jeff, do you have any thoughts on some reasonable compromise that gives some response to a need or desire to have some limit on the density, the number of units per acre or something? Pardon?
You could choose not to provide the additional 5-foot incentive. Therefore, you're just keeping it what it is today.
No, I mean, if we're trying to be, seek something that encourages redevelopment
But is the goal to incentivize redevelopment, or is the goal to not have redevelopment? I'm not sure.
I don't think it's either or. I don't think it's that black and white.
Okay. I honestly don't have an idea on that.
You don't.
I think you could choose not to give the incentive if you're concerned about more development. So you could just basically leave the 30-foot height and no density limit. Or if you choose to put a density limit, then you'd theoretically be downzoning. So you said you didn't want to go in that direction. It's hard. Without knowing the purpose, it's hard to give advice, because some of the comments are we want redevelopment. Some is we don't want too much redevelopment. But at the same time, there's an economic piece to this and sort of what will cause developers to redevelop. Under current zoning, there really hasn't been much redevelopment. So I think if you want more redevelopment, you should lean towards providing more incentives for that, because I think it's pretty clear that under existing zoning, there isn't enough an economic incentive for people to redevelop. Otherwise, they probably would have done that over the past two real estate cycles, including the one we're in now. So without knowing which what you would like to prioritize, it's hard to give a recommendation on that. If you want to err on the side of less redevelopment, less density, less traffic, then put an FAR cap on it. If you want to err on the side of encouraging redevelopment to become pedestrian oriented and meet some of those goals, then you should not have a density cap on it, and you should put the incentive back in.
I would add, I think it's a fair statement. Also, how strongly do you feel about trying to make sure a grocery store is there or stays there? You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the main objectives that we heard from the neighbors. When you said put an FAR cap on it, what comes to mind, Jeff?
What's that?
One alternative would be to put an FAR cap on it. What ideas do you have in that regard?
Well, again, I go back to the same statement I made. If you want to incentivize redevelopment, then I wouldn't put an FAR cap on it. If you want to disincentivize redevelopment, then you should put an FAR cap on it, because there isn't one in place right now. So okay. It has to be tied to what you would like to do.
And there's no in-between?
The in-between is then just marginalizing which direction you'd like to go.
It's kind of a policy call to you guys.
Exactly, but we're looking for some professional guidance. We don't have any expertise in, you know, what kind of reasonable FAR cap, because you've got a strong neighborhood concern about the impacts of increased density.
I mean, over the last, let's go back to 2004, right, to intense redevelopment
cycles
occurring. Nothing, pretty much nothing here is redevelopped. So what would be the reason?
There can be a lot of reasons for
sure,
that.
Sure, I get that. Yeah. But it's fairly telling. So what would then be the purpose of putting an FAR cap or a density limit on it?
To limit the impact.
Is this primarily traffic driven?
Right. Yeah. So if that's your primary goal, then by all means, you should go forward with an FAR cap and a density limit.
Well, let me give you just one data point. I'm not sure what exactly it means to me, but I took the information that we got. This was in the February memo, but then it was updated. There were some corrections made, and so this is the estimated peak hour trip generation under current conditions, under what could be built out with the existing zoning, what would be the result with modest development, which is essentially what we're discussing, and then the greatest development, which I think it's off the table, so we'll just stick with those first three. And I've modified them based on some input. Larry, I questioned when I saw these numbers, I questioned the trips that they were attributing to the apartments. They were using 0.38 trips per apartment unit during the trip peak hour. And to ask Larry totally about it, and Larry suggested adjusting that to 0.56, which makes more sense to me. So I adjusted that. The other thing I adjusted was that under the modest development, the only way that we would do that is if we expand the supermarket. And so under the greatest development scenario, there was an adjustment, and it resulted in peak hour an additional 51 trips for the 9,000 roughly square feet of extra supermarket space. So I added those 51 trips in, and I added in the additional trips for the residential units. The existing land use, for Larry's benefit, I'm going to say that the other question that he had on this was this scenario shows an increase of roughly 50,000 feet in office being built out under existing zoning, which he questioned that he thought it would probably be more retail and residential than office. And having said that, if you assume that whatever that build-out is under the existing zoning or the moderate zoning, the delta is going to be no net impact. And there will be more traffic generated, but all it's going to do is increase the difference between the existing current conditions and what could be built, if you follow. Because instead of it being office, it's now being retail and residential, which are going to... Okay, so having said that, the numbers that I come up with using Larry's adjusted trips for the residential, peak hour, 684 for the existing. It was at 677. What could be built under existing zone, under the existing zoning, 960. So you've got almost a 50% increase just building out what could be using the existing zoning with no density limits. Then under the modest development, it's 1130. So you've got an increase of 276 trips from existing to what current zoning would allow. And the increase from what current zoning would allow to what the modest development scenario is 70 more trips. Any trips is, you know, undesirable. And I, you know, my concern is that I don't want to add to a situation that's already so dire that it creates gridlock, and the problem is that even if we just leave it as is, it could result in a substantial increase in traffic as it is. So then you start saying, okay, if you're not going to downzone, then the difference is it's not as great as I expected. I was expecting a bigger difference, personally. Now, these are all modeled. This is all based on, you know, computer. But I did ask Larry how, you know, reliable he felt these numbers were, the ratios. And other than the adjustment for the residential and then the allocation between the office, he felt that it was a reasonable assumption. So that's what we're looking at. Having said that, I'm still troubled by I feel like there ought to be some way that you can put some sort of a limit on the density just to give some assurance to the neighbors that it's not going to get, you know, worse than this all assume. It makes some basic assumptions as far as how it's going to get built out, but there's nothing that dictates that is what's going to be.
And again, that's assuming that all of the property is developed at the...
It is. It is.
So.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, if I could ask you a question. Sure. On your chart. So I'm on the modest development land use under the PM side.
Oh, that guy.
In the same line item that Rick was talking about, you've got the mid-rise apartments at 574.
Mm-hmm.
I understood you were basing those on 900 square foot per unit average?
Actually, what we used was there's a FAR allocation and a density allocation for residential. So the number of units is based on the density. And then if you associate the FAR allocation with the number of units and do that math, it comes out to about 900. So it wasn't an assumption that we made up front, but that's what it comes out to.
You got it in backwards. Now, was the FAR assumption used too?
The FAR assumptions, I think, are right on page 32 of the binder. The FAR 2, so for... modest change, it was 1.5.
Okay.
For preservation, it was 0.8.
So then this information that we got that went from 1.3 to 2.
That's the total.
Is that, okay, so that's the whole center, yeah. Versus just...
Yeah,
the,
so there's like a total FAR, then it breaks it down by residential and commercial, and then it adds up to the total.
So... if we did not have a density limit, but we had an FAR limit of 1, let's quickly go through this math and figure out how the 574 units changes. We should be able to multiply, I mean, just the spitball number, multiply it times the 900 square feet, and then divide that by the 1.5 and divide it into 1, and then redivide it into 900 square feet, and we get a number. I mean, that's going to be super spitball, right?
Sure.
You're just nodding.
I'm processing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see what I can do.
I'm trying to think the best way to do that. So, let's see, that's 2/3. So you could do 3/4. Yeah, you can more or less just put it in half. So it'd be about a little
382?
Under 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That assumes full residential build out?
Yes, at a FAR of 1 for the residential.
Well, and the residential FAR for modest or for preservation is 0.8, so it's just slightly over half of the 1.5. So you'd be in the pretty close to the current zoning number.
Yeah, I came up with 380 instead of the 360, mm-hmm. which is the current number, 360, mm-hmm. and I came up with 382.
Well, mm-hmm. that might do it, right?
Yeah, and just put an FAR 1 on it instead of 0.8. But that limits the density.
Well,
limits the square footage.
Again, that's just an assumption. So you could do smaller units, but again, you're constrained by your parking.
And then we're back into, if we use parking, you know, 2 and 3 bedrooms, you're going to have one, is it 1.7 stalls?
1.8, I think.
1.8 stalls?
I think. And it escalates per bedroom.
Right, if you do the no bedroom or the one bedroom, and I don't think the zoning allows the micro apartments.
Not here.
Right, yeah, but you could do studios, you know, 500 square foot, yeah. 600 square foot.
Yeah, if studios. You provided parking. Yep.
And then that would be one stall, and then it would have to be a blend, because ultimately it gets down to the traffic generator.
Yeah, I think studios and ones are bigger than one stall, isn't it? I thought it was like 1.25 or something, but anyways.
We're going to have self-driving cars.
I know.
It's going to be different. No, we're not.
50 years.
I'm just troubled with density and FAR. I just know how limiting that is.
Do you want to know what the requirements are for the parking? 1.2 per studio, 1.3 one bedroom, 1.6 two bedroom, 1.8 three bedroom or more. And then you have to include visitor parking too.
15% visitor. Was it 15 or 10?
Anymore,
I think it's 10, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, 10.
I think it's
10. Okay. And then there's a cushion. So, and then of course you'd have to cover the retail parking too. This is just the residential. So
if we did not limit the density, they could build a whole bunch of tiny little studios and have 1.2 parking, which would be a lot more parking than a bunch of big 3 or 4 or 5 bedroom little mansions, as everybody calls them, in there that would only have 1.8 per unit.
That's true.
And that's counter to what the neighborhood is saying they want. They want less traffic.
It's unlikely there'll be 3 bedroom, you know, big condos in here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of what will happen. Yeah,
right.
Well, only, I mean, he's saying if the density is limited, then they can only build so many units.
I doubt they will anyway.
We may have talked about this before, but since traffic is the bigger concern from the neighbors, is there a way that you, Jeff, is there any situation where you can utilize the, put a limit on parking, which parking is probably a pretty close relationship to the traffic?
I mean, cities often have a maximum parking, but it's not intended to limit development.
That also leads to other problems with parking in the neighborhood.
I think we've heard that they don't want that.
Yeah, we heard a lot from the neighbors about
that. But limit the parking, but you still have to meet the parking codes. So by limiting the parking...
You might as well limit the number of units. Yeah.
That's the point.
It's the same thing.
I'm trying to back into it from
traffic input. Well, just put a density limit.
Pick the number you
just put it, whatever number of units you want, and that's what
we're not going to give it the answer.
There is.
Well, I'm trying to. Do you see what I'm just trying to get?
I understand, but I think you guys got to figure out what you want. So.
And what you're saying is getting you to the same place. Why not do this? Do it the way we normally do. Put a density limit on it if that's what you want. But limiting the number of parking stalls. I'm just trying to. Yeah, I know you're trying to be creative.
Out of the box.
I understand.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the way to do it.
No.
All right, if I think it's 7-8 acres, something like that in total. Does anybody know the gross, not total?
You must have it somewhere.
Their side?
Yeah, roughly. Houghton side? All of it?
Well, all the numbers are for the whole total.
Yeah.
Everything on this sheet's for the whole. And so I think it's about 9 acres, somewhere in there.
Okay.
So if I took 9 acres times 34 units an acre, that's 306. That's pretty close to the baseline of 360. Mm-hmm. And so at the 380, I'm just assuming the 9 acres is about right, I think. If we took the 382 was the number we came up with before backing it up. Divided that into the 9, that's 42 units an acre. And that way we're not taking away any of the rights. But
So 42 units an acre?
Yeah, if I was to, boy, just, I'm so struggling because of the property rights issue on this. I would probably plant the flag at 34 units an acre.
And just to clarify, that's if you have a 30-foot height limit. If you have the 35-foot height limit, it is less probably than what could be built there, right? Because...
Well, no, I was speaking if we allowed the 30-foot height limit.
Oh, okay.
If we allowed the 35-foot height limit.
So you would like...
Just in discussion to change it to 34 units an acre.
Okay.
Because that gets closer to what they have now. Because that would get them about 320 units instead of now it's 360.
But that's an artificial. I mean, they can get more and they can get less. And so So that's not a legal requirement.
Yeah. Right.
Well, actually, yeah, in reality, this little scenario under the baseline, that assumes 50,000 square feet of office. Remember, everybody said that's not what you'd get. Yeah, that would be transferred into
housing. Yeah.
Housing.
So it would be way more than the 360.
Yeah.
It'd be way more than the 360.
We have existing 73,000 square feet of office.
Not way more. I mean, if you use the 900 per unit, 50,000 square feet, that's like 55 units. So, okay. But that's more.
So 55 onto 360 is, say, 410 divided it into the 9 acres. That's 45 units an acre. Okay, as the baseline.
Yeah, yeah. What you guys were throwing out some numbers before about what on a more mid-rise, high-rise development, what the units per acre. Remember having those numbers thrown out at the last meeting when we were talking about 24 and say, well, 24 isn't really that dense. What's more typical in a mid-rise?
The high, as far as limits that are listed in the comprehensive plan,
mm-hmm.
48 units per acre is the highest that we have listed.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. You were going to say something, Paul?
No, I think just for those areas that have a density on them.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Right. Well... That's not too far from what John came up with. It's obviously a lot more than what the neighbors wanted to see.
But you guys are assuming a whole lot of housing and not keeping a lot of the existing commercial is what you're saying.
Well, there'd be retail. It'd be mixed use. Retail ground floor,
if they,
housing above.
If they redeveloped, yeah.
Well, that's the way you would prepare the zoning, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably what you don't want to have happen is somebody drop all the potential office space and just do it all in housing.
Right.
You know, and so there was a discussion about the people who develop property are really good at certain kinds of developments, and it's an oddball deal to have retail, office, and housing all in one.
That's what I'm saying. Retail housing is a more...
Right,
typical,
right.
Yeah.
And you go to Juanita Bay, you know, the whole Juanita Village. It's retail and four floors of housing on top of it.
But this is currently there's a lot of office there, a lot of small offices there.
Over by the trail.
Qualifies on the retail, on the ground level, that you could have some small, I was talking about redevelopment. You can have some office in that ground floor as well.
I was just saying that those folks didn't sound eager to redevelop this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so. I mean, we have to look at the eventuality of when things do.
The lowest, my understanding is the lowest impact as far as peak hour traffic is from residential. Is that not true?
That is true.
So if that's the case, then that... You know, gives you your best scenario, having retail on the ground floor, residential on your second floor, and, if you limit the density to X, and if it's, we're circling around this. Do you guys even feel like it's necessary to limit density? Because that's the critical issue. That's where we've got the biggest disagreement between the Planning Commission
right.
and the neighbors, and what we recommended.
Well, Well, last time we said 18 to 24, and they said no density limit, so now we're saying 48.
Well, John just threw that out as...
Which we're doubling what we said
I said if I planted my flag, it would be at 34, not 48.
Well, but that was before you factored in the office. See, that was strictly, you're just using the apartments in this scenario, but you didn't factor in the 50,000 square feet.
Right, after we did the math, it came out to 48. And
yeah.
I still think that's probably a bit tall from where we're at with the neighborhood.
Kelly.
So I've been sitting here and I'm like, what do I want? I want development, but I definitely hear the neighborhood saying, keep small, keep small. I think that we need to set some sort of density limit to honor what we've heard from the neighborhood.
I do too.
I think the 48 is reasonable then, because it's a compromise between medium density and no limits. Right? Would that downzone them?
No.
18 to 24, is that downzoning it?
That is.
Yeah, it would.
That is. Yeah, because right now they've got no limit.
Yeah.
So that would be a big limit.
So.
I don't suppose we could go something different like 30.
Well, we're talking 48 right now.
The Houghton Center.
We could.
The Houghton Center, which is the Starbucks, the grocery store, the bank, that block is 4.6 acres at 48 units. That's 220 units on that block. And just on the Waddell piece, we just said no limit.
Right, but it is naturally limited to
and
just
in
by
the bulk,
size.
In the bulk. Yeah. And then on the city-owned piece, we said leave it at RM 3.6. So, but at the 48 units, that's what it ends up, 220 units.
220?
Just doing the math. Okay. Now, what I doubt they're going to get that many in there because I think it'd be really difficult to get that. Well, I don't know. You put the top on it and all the other criteria. And
that's if it's all residential?
Well, no, that would have to have a grocery store.
Yeah, it would have to have a
grocery store.
And,
yeah.
So
no,
be,
if that's where they have to, and they'd have to provide affordable housing, and they got to go through design review, and they've got to have all the setbacks and all the things
all
that we're talking about.
Circulation.
So
there's got to be commensurate
and
benefits
sidewalks.
To
yeah,
warrant.
Yeah, so with the setbacks and stuff, that's probably going to limit some of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's going to limit those.
Yeah. So Jeff.
Yeah.
At 48 units an acre, and the Houghton Center side is 4.6 acres, plus or minus some tenths. Mm-hmm. Do you think they could get to 220 on that? I don't do this kind of architecture, so I don't know.
I mean, it's hard to say right off. So you're saying 48 units an acre as a cap?
Yes, 48 times 4.6 acres is 220 units. And I'm like, wow, I don't know that they, with the height limit criteria and the setbacks and the open space and the circulation, I just don't know how they could get there, but I don't know, maybe they could.
I think with the first floor commercial requirement and only one story above that, it would be challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, we assume 38, so you're 10 above what we assumed. So...
Could be two stories.
No,
because grocery stores take more height.
Well, they could get three stories if they push it all down.
38 is what we assumed, 38 units an acre for the preservation scenario.
Ricky said 38.
Preservation.
38 is what we assumed, yeah.
And that's with some office and other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that would give them a little bonus over preservation.
Well, that's, I mean, when you add in, if you're throwing out the office and you're strictly ground floor retail / limited office and the upper floors are all apartments or residential, then that's, instead of having the mix that they were looking at. I don't know.
I mean, there's so much more information that we just don't have our arms around.
We don't know. And if they don't develop for another 17 years, like they're talking about, it's like we don't know what transportation's going to be like then. I mean, it could be very different. It could be worse. It could be better.
This is difficult.
Okay. And I would probably err on 34 as opposed to 48.
Well, 34
about 36.
Or 38 that the consultant.
Multiples of 12.
No. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go below preservation.
And I still like the idea of a choice. If you go up, you're limited. If you don't go up, it's, you get what you get. And you let the bulk and mass limit it. Because that way we meet the second and third criteria.
Oh, you're saying give them either. They either get BC zoning 30 feet or the...
To meet both criteria, don't downzone. If they can stay at 30 feet and there's no limit, they want to increase it with the restrictions, then we've met both goals.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they can choose. And if they do get 35 feet, I would probably err on 34 feet. So, I mean, to go around the table, or 34 units an acre, excuse me. 34 units an acre.
But 34
is less than that number.
Yeah, it's less than preservation.
So 38 is preservation too?
Was 38 the preservation number?
Yeah.
38 is preservation. Mm-hmm. If we go to 34, then do we lose any sort of hope of variety of housing?
No, because if you go to 35 feet and we limit it, the affordable housing would kick in. So you'd get that variety.
You get 10%.
Yeah.
Is there enough incentive to move people towards that? That's my. If we're going to try to, let's make it something that gives you a reasonable chance of getting. I don't know, John. You're. But we need to come up with something. Okay, I hear we've got a consensus that we're not willing to approve something that has no limits on density.
Correct.
Right. Correct.
Yes.
Would we veto that?
We would veto an action that had unlimited density.
Okay.
Right?
I'm not sure.
Because that would put it at the 574.
Which would default to the current, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. It would default with the current with the extra 5 feet, though.
What's that?
It would default to the current with the extra. Oh, if no. we simply vetoed it, it would default to the current.
Exactly.
Which, no density.
Yeah. So what do we got? If we can come up with something that's... I would like to think that there's some number, whether it's 34, 36, 48.
Well, I'll come up to the 38, which was the preservation.
That's kind of where I am.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll come up to that number.
38 units per acre, and you'll veto it if they don't agree. Is that where we are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Straw poll on everybody?
Yeah, I'm not vetoing over that.
And I'm not either.
You're not vetoing over...
Mm-mm.
I think the number we're coming up with is artificial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that, I think it might disincentivize this whole thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think it
wait a
second. A lot of time talking about this.
I understand, but you're saying that you would agree with Planning Commission, which allows greater heights and no zoning limitations?
But look at this.
Really?
We've
okay.
also got, under current zoning, 360 apartments. But we're talking... Step backs. We're talking about limiting the size
There's
of these
natural
buildings,
limitations that are going to happen.
Which is going to so it's not going to be the 574, because 574 was also if everything
yeah.
went up to 35, but really only one property is probably going to go to 35.
Yep.
So I mean I think that what we're looking at is somewhere between the 360, the 574. You cut that in half, you got a 4 something, which was the 48. It was kind of like the 48 units per acre, which is high density, which seems like a reasonable compromise to me.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what that number is. We just said it was like 380 or something like that. Or
hey, however, what I think I heard you say was let the bulk and scale limit what's going on. Did
I
you
don't
say
think I've ever said that in my life.
Okay. All right. I was. Okay.
Well, everything we need a design review and with a setback. I mean, the
yeah,
whole idea.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
We
I guess
have,
I did say that by saying, you know, we're talking about. You know, they're not going all the way out to the street.
Right.
you know, with their 35 feet, you know, they're coming in. It's only going to be two stories probably if it's 35 feet, grocery store, and one story above.
Only where the grocery store is. It's not going to be all grocery store.
Who knows?
Well, no. But then the across the street is probably not going to also have a grocery store.
So did you say then 48 units an acre and put a density cap? Or are you saying let all the steps and jigs and jogs create the density cap? Help me out. What exactly are you saying?
I don't know the difference between the two. I can't tell you, but I just feel like 24 seems like a disincentive, and I think that we are
being overly restrictive.
Overly restrictive, and we are setting ourselves up to for a veto that we don't want to do.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. So, I mean, if we can come up with something that feels like an incentive, doesn't overburden the neighborhood, I don't want to do that, but I also don't know. There's so many factors on traffic. What we do on this one site is not...
Right. So if I hear you right, Betsy, you're saying you would stick with our original recommendation with one exception. Instead of 24 units per acre, it would be 48 units per acre. And everything else would be the same as far as the design review, the step backs, the affordable housing... All of those factors.
I know it sounds like a lot, but I think I would do that. Yeah.
And the alternative is if they don't go for that, then they've got the 30 and they haven't lost anything. They have 30 with BC zoning.
Yes.
Got it.
Is anybody else? That's what Betsy's suggesting.
Yeah, it's just me.
Who would vote in favor of that?
Or who would veto that?
No. We're talking about what we're going to recommend to the Planning Commission.
I like the 38.
38.
So you wouldn't vote for it?
That's preservation.
That's preservation.
Yeah.
48. 38. Kelly.
Split the difference.
42.
You mean it, or are you just...
I was at 38, and now Betsy's talked me into... I
know. I don't want to talk anybody into anything. I'm just... That's my process. I just don't want to disincentivize the grocery store.
Well, I'm not going to veto 48, so I'll go 48.
Bill?
I'm still the same place.
48?
No limit.
No limit. But you wouldn't oppose 48?
No.
You would not oppose it? John?
I think we have the answer, 48.
Okay, I changed my mind.
Okay, and there's no telling that that's going to fly anyway, but we're saying our recommendation would be 48 residential, mixed use, retail ground floor. That's only with, that's 35 foot, but that's only with the incentives that we provided in the previous, what we wanted as far as design review, the affordable housing, the traffic, the setbacks, the other, all those things.
But the 48...
We're putting a density limit of 48 units per acre.
Whether it's 30 feet in height or 35 feet, or is that only
for the 35?
Only for the 35.
Only for the 35.
And you have no density limit for the 30?
No, that's BC. That's the we're not changing the 30 at 30 feet. They get what they have.
Okay.
Wouldn't we want to have the density for the whole thing? Just in case somebody wants to put a bunch of office stuff on the bottom floor.
Okay. All right. So 30 feet, no limit.
Two or three stories.
We got Google 35 right down
feet,
the
48.
Yep.
And this is a deal breaker. You will veto it if they don't agree.
Well, there's I think a majority of the people in this council are saying that if there's no density limits whatsoever, then we'll veto it. So we got to come up with something that's an acceptable limit on density.
Right, I got you.
And we feel like we're really straight. We've just doubled what we'd originally
recommended. I just want to make sure I'm telling them the right thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I'm hearing is if they can go up to 30 feet and they do not have a density limit. But for that extra 5 feet, which they can get if they put in a grocery store or the other uses.
And the design review.
And the design review and the affordable housing. they have a density limit of 48 units per acre.
Yeah.
And what you're telling the Planning Commission is if they don't put that density limit on it, then you would veto.
Yep, just leave it at the BC 30.
So what would be the...
Okay. Got it.
So a realistic unlimited, it's limited by the bulk and mass. Is that, would that be a lot more than 48? Did we talk that number around before earlier?
Or at the at the 35 feet?
Yeah.
It was the whole site. I'd say it's pretty close to what they could do. I mean, it obviously depends on how big the units are.
Okay.
But
48 is kind of close to what they could do anyway with
kind of close, yeah.
Okay, can I... So are we arguing over nothing then?
No.
It's pretty, you know, you wound up pretty close to what I think they could reasonably do anyways. Might be a little less, you know, depends. There's a lot of nuances.
But there is that limit there. I mean, you've insured it instead of just hoping that it works out that way.
Mm-hmm. Can I say back what I heard? I thought I heard Angela say, just to make sure I'm clear. So if they stick with the current zoning at 30 feet, then we have no design review, no, that's not right.
No, no.
Okay.
I think here's how I'm seeing it work. We have difficulty requiring the affordable housing if you're not giving them anything. So we won't be able to have affordable housing if you have 30 feet. But you can have design review, and you can have those step backs that we've talked about.
Okay.
But and what I've heard you say is there will be no density limit if you have 30 feet.
30 feet, yeah.
But the 35 feet is when you get the specific uses, the grocery store and stuff, and you get the affordable housing, and you also have design review for that, and you also have the step backs for that. So the two sort of special things with the 35 feet are the use and the affordable housing. Oh, and the density limit. So.
Okay. Are we doing the right thing?
Moving on. There's quite a few more. Hey, so
it's okay. Next, pertaining existing zoning HNC 2-3. We already talked about that one.
What is it? just so I'm sure I've got it right.
Okay, this is on page 9.
Now this
existing
is what,
zoning in HENC 2 at RM 3.6.
So this is what you're suggesting, right? Is that where you left that? I'm sorry.
Leave the existing zoning.
Yeah, leave the existing zoning.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But, this
but
is
it's
just,
not a deal breaker, but you'd like them to do that.
Exactly. This is the same as what we had on the comp plan, only this is the zoning element.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Okay. Next one. I think we agreed on that.
What
they
is
want
that?
The
page 10.
Yeah, we're at the bottom of 9 is the setback 0 from the back of the sidewalk can be done with an easement to get wider sidewalks, blah, blah, blah. But, and widened sidewalks should not count against maximum lot coverage or density. That's not going to factor in. Landscaping should be incorporated into the sidewalk design. Planning Commission agreed. The neighbors agreed. But they wanted an understanding of the cross section for Northeast 68th, which hasn't been provided. They'd like that incorporated in the design guidelines. So I think they're just, again, it falls into that view corridor issue. They just, in the design guidelines, they want to see something in there that addresses
You want to be that,
that
specific?
Cross section. Well, after what we had at the Houghton, or at the South Houghton Park and Ride, where the thing went sideways on us, it'd be nice to have.
That's a different issue, though.
I know,
this is saying, I mean, if this project is, if there's a project developed 10 years from now, what we want on 68th may have changed, or do you want it in the, I mean, does it seem reasonable to put the cross section of 68th in the design guidelines now? Does that seem like a good thing for you?
Typically, what?
I can't hear you, Joel.
Typically.
Put it in the design guideline?
Typically, we don't.
Typically, Kirkland takes, we take a more flexible approach in that when it comes to time to do the project, we're going to, that's when we want to get into those details.
Mm-hmm.
The 6th Street Corridor study will have a cross section in it. that is a starting point. And those were, you know, if you recall, we presented kind of the existing cross-section and a proposed 60-foot cross-section and a proposed 80-foot cross-section as part of the 6th Street Corridor Study. And so all those will be, you know, those will be in the corridor study as well. And one of the, you know, points of feedback that came out of that is there was a lot of conversation about on-street parking, and the determination was because of, well, because of the transit on 68th as well as the bikes and the desire for wider sidewalks is that we step back from that on-street parking, and that's not included in those cross-sections.
Okay.
How does somebody make, how does a developer make plans on what's anticipated for that entire street path without having a...
They come in for a pre-app, and Public Works and planning and building are there, and we all discuss what they're going to need to do. So Public Works would be there and talk to them about what kind of improvements they wanted.
And so if we don't have a policy or any sort of design direction now about bike lanes, about parallel parking, about street trees, about bushes, about...
The various plans include, you know, the Transportation Master Plan includes a map of where we require bike facilities, of which Northeast 68th Street is one of them. So
uphill and downhill or just uphill?
Yeah. Our standard is, you know, bike lanes in both directions. So we would, now if it's a developer, they're going to do half street improvements, so we would only get one direction. But that would be a requirement. And then we have design requirements around sidewalk width. This is a designated, what do we call them?
Whatever the type of street is.
So whatever the,
pedestrian oriented. And so that's in the zoning code. That sidewalk width is in the zoning code.
So that would, you know, those are the types of things that we would use to piece together the cross section.
So you're saying you think this is covered? That's what I'm hearing. You think this is covered?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the points that in the supporting discussion from the neighbors is a design guidelines example, page 66, conceptual foundation. Shows a 3 to 4 foot curb zone and 10 foot walk. Where are we measuring the setback from?
66, did you say?
Of.
Must have been the big packet.
Must have been the big packet. I don't have.
60. Yeah, okay.
But they're citing that as an example, and I think you want to.
Well, let me look at it again. 66, conceptual foundation.
Maybe 67.
Thank you.
Design guidelines. Look at that.
So, I'm sorry, what's the question? This is a
3 to 4 foot curb zone, 10 foot walk.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Are we measuring the setback from? Is the question. And I guess that's where they're getting at. It'd be good to have a cross section so that it's clear.
So this is a. Again, this isn't a regulation. This is an idea, which is what they're suggesting. We can say that. We can propose that to the Planning Commission. Planning Commission, if you want to
for
do
design
that.
Review.
It's up to you.
Even if it's not your normal practice, would it hurt anything to do it, to have it as part of the design?
Well, what I see is if we decide later that we don't want it to be exactly that way, then we're going to have to go back and revise the design guidelines. That's what I'm hesitating about.
But that's also why the neighbors are saying they'd like to see it, because they want to have some assurance that that is what's going to be the result. It's not going to get reinterpreted by somebody, you know, down the road.
I'll propose.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, we'll do it. That's fine.
Okay, good.
I think Angela's going to retire.
Just telling you normal procedure. We're happy to do it.
Thank you.
Okay, so is that a deal breaker if the Planning Commission does not want to do that?
No. I don't see that as a deal breaker, but it's got to be a little give and take.
Next, Rick.
Yes. Established maximum height throughout the center at 30 feet with 35 feet allowed if a grocery store, drugstore, hardware store is provided, requires step backs for the third story a minimum of 5 feet with an average of 15 feet through careful attention to design criteria. Planning Commission agreed, and 35 feet would apply to the entire site with the grocery store, drugstore, and or hardware store on it. I think that's, with what we just agreed to, it's a moot point. Right? Anybody disagree?
But the residents are saying, this letter says just for the...
I understand.
Is that what you...
But they also did. They also had bigger restrictions on the density. I mean, what we just agreed to on the 48.
Okay.
Then, okay, we've got agreement on the... See, require additional step back of second and third stories at four corner, 68th and 108th, to provide a gateway, sense of arrival, and to preserve the views. Not a regulation of the zoning code, but including design guidelines.
Really?
And that's probably appropriate, just put in the design guidelines.
And so, Angela, would you discuss for everyone like we did today about how we go through the process of ensuring that these are in the design guidelines and that we're okay with them? We talked a little bit about that today, the process for getting the city council to approve this and then continuing with the...
We
decided we weren't going to do that.
Yeah.
So what we will, because everybody would be more reassured if we did it all at one time,
yeah.
I think. So what we will be doing is bringing the design guidelines, the additions to the design guidelines back to you at your whatever meeting we're scheduled to come back.
Yeah.
And then the council will look at the... Oh, we were also going to take them to the design review board and see if they had any additional suggestions to our wording or how we, you know, they felt they could work with them. The way it's going to look is we have the design guidelines in place. It's going to be special considerations for the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center.
Right.
And we'll have some specific things. And one of those we were suggesting would be that corner feature.
Right.
So.
Okay. Next is prioritize retaining small local businesses that serve the adjacent neighborhoods by establishing a limit on the size of individual businesses to discourage big box retail and large office uses. Planning Commission did not agree with that. The neighbors requested that the staff develop and incorporate a method for assuring that large-scale office or retail uses that aren't primarily related to meeting everyday needs of the surrounding neighborhoods, that those are prohibited. Got any thoughts on that, staff? Can you think of a...
I've got some.
You know where we're trying to go with it, that you just don't want to have some... We want to be oriented towards businesses that are serving the neighborhood rather than bringing in big office retail. Well, office isn't even going to be a factor with what we just approved, but the retail, big box retail, would be. So
I guess you could, you can put a limit on it, square footage limit. We were concerned about where do you put that limit. You want to have a larger grocery store or whatever, so you don't want to put a limit that precludes that.
Could you put a limit, say a limit except for grocery stores?
Grocery stores, hardware stores, and drug stores.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, what limit do you want?
What do you have any examples of limits like that?
I think we have 60,000 square feet in Northeast 85th Street, but that's about it.
60, well, that's 000. Way too big.
And we have also limits like 8,000 or something in areas where we want to keep it really small. Mm-hmm. But that would definitely discourage a grocery store.
Well, what if we did 8,000 except grocery, drug, and hardware store?
Your call.
Yeah, tell us.
You may disagree with that?
Yeah, I'm...
What about restaurants?
How does a big restaurant?
These are.
That's good. I like
that.
That's okay. You don't want an unintended consequence to come out of this. Yeah. And restaurants.
So here's my thought. I'm really struggling with this currently.
Okay, 8,000.
Wait.
No.
John's giving us some input.
I think this is wrong. I don't think the site, because of the housing element, is going to end up having a big box store. I just don't. It just doesn't make sense.
Not to mention the topography.
Well, and the parking limitations.
And especially with the current owners that are committed and serving the neighborhood and that sort of thing. And I'm really afraid of the unintended consequence of arbitrarily setting like an 8,000 square foot limit. And I say that from personal experience because my office building is struggling with this exact same thing because of 20 years ago, the zoning put little teeny limits that really is making redevelopment, it's difficult. It's just really, really difficult. So I'm really not in favor of that. I know that the grocery stores want to be 25, maybe 30,000 square feet in today's numbers. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that's going to be later, but in today's numbers,
I'm going to just say that as I read, I just now read the supporting discussion, and it's all oriented towards concerns with office, large office uses, as opposed to, I don't think big box retail is a realistic use in that site, so I don't think it really is. If we're not allowing office uses on the upper floors, then I don't think it's going to be a problem. And no, I thought it was ground floor retail, you know, typical mixed use, ground floor retail, upper floor residential.
You may have, I'm just clarifying, because what happens then to those small offices that are on the...
No, we're talking about for redevelopment. I mean, if any existing, they're fine.
They could, yeah, but there will be existing nonconformances. They can't expand, they can't...
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's what I heard us say either.
Oh, I thought that was. No?
It's
now
I just
I'm talking
be sure
about with the 35 feet for the 35 feet for the incentive.
Are you but think about
for the redevelopment.
Wait,
right?
Well,
so if it's the 30 feet, they can do whatever they want.
But what if PCC decides to develop over there,
mm-hmm.
and that whole site then is part of that, then those guys would get, they wouldn't be able to come back? All those offices? The doctor's offices?
Those aren't part of PCC.
I think we need to allow
separate property.
Separate property?
Yeah.
I think we need to make provisions that if, you know, some second story office wants to take place, that would
hurts.
Be really, really good.
Dentist.
That little medical office
facilities.
Yeah, I thought
we talked about
thing.
Having dentists and doctors and stuff on the second floor and
I think that's complete. You're not going to get that without elevators, and you're not going. It's totally infeasible to
have
elevators on a three-story. They got walk-up dentist office.
No, with you'd need elevators.
Above the cleaners, there's those.
I'm so confused. You'll have an elevator for residential too.
You'll have
elevators. You have to. I mean,
you'll
have. Yeah, that's true.
You have to have that
I'm
for
getting
access.
Rummy.
I'm not trying to. I just didn't realize that that was
something
that you had put in there.
That's something that I mentioned it, but nobody else responded.
He dreamed
to
that
it.
One. He said.
Yeah, I did say ground floor retail, upper floor residential, because that was the unit. Then how are you gonna? What if you're saying your zoning is 48 units, but are you saying you could have 48 units and you can also have office on top of it?
No. You're going to be completely constrained by the envelope, Rick. The envelope is only going to allow so much. So,
what's the constraint? Honestly, we've done is put a residential unit per acre limit. But if you're saying that you can, and that's above the first floor retail or retail office mix, but if you're saying that the upper floors can include both office or, you know, whatever. And the 48 units per acre. Well, then you're not putting any kind of cap on your density.
They won't do that.
You've got a height limit, so that puts cap. And then you just wouldn't have 40. You would have the full. You'd have some office there instead of some apartments.
No, you could have both. Why not?
Well, you could have both. Why not?
You could have 48 units per acre plus.
That's pretty unlikely. We haven't seen too many examples.
Yeah, it's.
I know. I'm just saying. I don't see where we're putting the limit on it if you don't.
I don't want to get too prescriptive on this. I think that, I mean, right now we've got a nice mix of small neighborhood businesses. People have always said they wanted they wanted some neighborhood businesses. They're the local massage therapist or the real estate agent.
When we had this discussion just a short time ago, we were talking about how typically people don't, the developers, they'll do retail, ground floor retail, upper floor residential. You do not find developers who like doing ground floor retail, upper floor office, and
maybe they don't like it, but that doesn't
that
mean
true.
That's what I said, and that was when I said, but so we're talking about just doing.
But sometimes it does, but they don't. But I'm just saying, what about those people who have the offices?
Yeah.
That are existing west of. Well, it's on the north side of the. Yeah,
it's
never mind.
Outside
it's
of
not
us.
On your side of the.
But
street.
We have some.
But
too.
Even say no. But having said that, this is only for the 35 for the redevelopment scenario.
So you're trying to limit
the
size
of
offices?
But why do you care if there's offices?
Is that what you want to do?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm missing something.
I'm saying it's a moot point because if they're going to do the redevelopment, then they're only going to do, in my mind, if they're getting the 35 feet, then they're only doing retail / office on ground floor and residential on the upper floors. That was what I had in my mind.
Okay. First time I've heard you say retail / office.
Yeah.
Well. On the office side, it's like insurance agent, and that's
right.
On that.
Assuming they're all on the ground floor.
Ground floor, yeah.
Right now they're not on the
but
ground floor.
But now they're not on the ground floor. They're upstairs.
I'm talking about a redevelopment.
But why do you care if they're on the second floor?
Because I'm trying to put a cap on development, and if you allow, first of all, I don't know of anybody who develops that way anyway, into current, but. Even if you did, then you're not putting any cap. The 48 units, you're saying you have 48 units per acre, and you can also put office uses above the ground floor as well, then you're not limiting it to the 48 units per acre. You're
allowed. The bag's only so big to put all this stuff.
Right, the bag's only so big. So you don't get the whole.
Downsize the size of your apartments. Instead of having your apartments at 900 square feet, have an average size of 700. And now you also can make up that extra space with office.
Okay.
Simple. Now you've just increased the traffic.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Okay.
Maybe.
Let's move on.
Well.
I get it. What you said was office can only be on the ground floor. Is that correct?
That was for the redevelopment scenario. That was what
for the redevelopment scenario.
Yeah, that's what I thought we were agreeing to.
Was that written in anything that we?
Well, it is, and we're coming up, and it says X percentage, and
the way you're going to do that, it's really not a percentage. It's just it can only be on the ground floor.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
For the redevelopment scenario. Correct.
When you see your typical three-story mixed use, it's. Ground floor retail office, upper floor residential.
Or sometimes upper floor office. But not usually a mix of both, although Jeff is saying some places.
That's pretty unusual.
I could see the retail office, but not retail, and that's where.
Especially in three stories or two stories.
Yeah.
Jeff, you look like you really want to say something.
No, I'm okay. There are examples of mixed. You're saying. You don't commonly see retail and office above?
No, that's one thing, but we're not saying that. We're going with the retail residential. I'm saying you don't see retail, office, residential in one building.
Yeah, not commonly.
No.
So are you trying to say just limit the office to the
ground? To the
ground floor.
Yes.
Okay.
We got it.
The consensus
I just didn't know that.
For the redevelopment scenario only.
Right, I'd have heard that.
Only
they can do whatever they want on this.
I'm going to make a note of that. I got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you guys okay with that? Do you track with me? If you're going to track, the whole point of this was to put some limit on it, and by putting the dwelling unit limit, that's the least impact from a traffic standpoint, so that's part of the reason I was liking the residential angle instead of...
I think it depends on the type of business. I mean, I don't think you can carte blanche that when it's a tiny little business. I mean...
Well, I'm just saying as a general...
Maybe generally, but...
Yeah, that, and that's the only way we can really, we're not going to...
Okay. Also, we're back to the big box. Sorry.
That's right. That's why I said...
You're not worried about the big box.
Office use is not an issue, and big box isn't going to come into this site.
So do you all agree with this Planning Commission response? Don't include that no big box thing?
We're not going to include
those. That's
where
we had where we were before.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. The drive-through...
Yeah, prohibit drive-through facilities except gas stations.
What about buses that are drive-through?
Planning Commission agreed, but only prohibit for restaurant drive-through. And
cleaner drive-throughs and bank drive-throughs. And
if you look at the supporting discussion from the neighbors, I think it makes some sense. If you're trying to have a pedestrian-oriented center, and you got issues with circulation, traffic as it is, and safety, then it doesn't make sense to try to incorporate drive-through facilities.
Okay, so...
And so one of the things that hit my mind on this, I had never... the Planning Commission discussed, what about the drive-through to get your medication, the drugstore?
Well, that's just what I was thinking. Okay. I was thinking, if it was like a drive-through pharmacy, you're not going to have people like... queuing up probably in like at a restaurant, and it may.
Oh yes, you do.
I was at Walgreens today.
Yeah.
Are you?
If you want drive through, go to Walgreens. Don't come to Houghton.
Well,
I would just think
so
we might be able
we're
to
pedestrian
see the parking
oriented.
Spaces.
We're not.
Okay, I'm not
going to
argue.
Quarter.
So you agree with this with the neighborhood?
Yep.
Or the citizens.
Yep.
Okay.
So no drive through.
No drive through.
Except none at all, not even the gas station?
No, except the gas station.
Except the gas station.
Yeah, we like that.
We want the gas station.
The bank will become non-conforming. Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't have a drive-thru anymore.
No.
Right. It took it out. Right. They closed it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. They closed it. And I was so upset.
Okay, next.
You're going against what we're saying
next.
Here.
Wait. Are we going to veto over this? Because they said...
So. Yeah.
Qualified it to restaurants.
They said drive-throughs are okay except for restaurant facilities.
And I would veto it. I think they got it wrong.
And we're saying no drive-throughs, so are we going to veto over this?
You know, I didn't think Kirkland allowed drive-throughs. I was so surprised when that Taco Time went in.
We allow in some areas.
Zones, yeah.
Some areas we don't.
I think we
okay,
should not
quick,
allow.
Okay, quick check. John's made a good point. Is this something that we would veto on this, the drive-through issue?
Yes.
I think it could be dangerous.
I would.
People
Bill?
Driving around.
Well, that's four, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I don't think it's appropriate.
Okay,
it's
I got it.
It's a deal killer.
I got it. Deal killer.
Next, limit the ground level retail uses with some limited X percent office uses allowed, provided they primarily serve adjacent neighborhoods. Planning Commission agreed. The neighborhood recommended staff identify a percentage that can be reviewed and discussed.
So I think you've done it with your. It has to be on the ground floor, right? I mean, we don't need to do a percentage too.
No, it already assumes that there's a limit to the ground level retail uses with a limited percent of office uses.
Ground
level.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty prescriptive. I don't know.
Well, Planning Commission agreed. There's just, so you don't have that in any other locations in the city? Some percentage limitation on the office versus... Because that could... No?
I thought there was some place where it was a 30%. Why is 30%? Is it...
Are you talking about the square footage or are you talking about...
Because
You have to think about, too, this one... we were talking about this earlier today. This is an issue because, like... What if you have a very small site? You know, some of those sites on the east side of 108th. So there, and then you say, oh, you can only have, 20% office. So maybe if you want to have a percentage, you might also have a minimum allowance of square footage or something. I don't know. Because it could be a problem depending on the size of the site.
Okay.
Well, so what would that do on one of the really small sites? You have an owner occupied that may have own a small little retail and have their own business there. So let's say they're an accountant and they own the site and they want to have a little accounting shop and then next to it a little retail shop, because if we do what you just mentioned, they wouldn't be allowed because the office space might be too small.
70% retail, yeah. So what it is now, I don't know. That's what comes to mind for me. If the site is small enough and you have a set percentage that works for the larger sites, it could be prohibitive for smaller sites.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
the goal is to avoid, to try to be encouraging office uses that are primarily serving the neighborhood rather than allowing large office uses that aren't really oriented towards the neighborhood.
It is set thing. Right now we say 70, well, no, that includes office.
Yeah. Well, and encourage, exactly, yeah.
Jeff gave suggestions. You want to stick with it? And then we'll work on it. I mean,
yeah, we would like to have some, because we really do as the...
We just haven't worked out how it's
going
to go yet. Okay.
And so you said 70%, Paul, that's where the 30% came from, so...
I think currently, that's what it is.
But currently, it's 70% of the ground floor needs to be retail, restaurant, or office. I mean, it includes all of them.
Oh, okay.
So that doesn't really work. We were thinking it did, but it doesn't.
Okay, the next three items are agreed.
Oh, great. Okay.
Now, page 13, second bullet, require that a coordinated master access and circulation plan be provided to serve all developments within the HNC to provide a comprehensive approach for property access, improve safety, and reduce traffic operations impacts. And staff said it would need to be linked to a threshold for property size or building size. Planning Commission said no, don't include that. And the neighbors are saying recommends adding a policy or a zoning code requirement that the property owners work together with the city to resolve these issues. With access and circulation.
I don't know how you would do that with a zoning code requirement. Does anybody have any idea? I mean, so the Starbucks comes in and they say, we want to redevelop our site. And you say, sorry, you can't do it until you work with all your neighbors to come up with a plan. And the neighbors say, we're not interested.
What about the threshold? You know, you say, okay, you don't apply it if it's some small little site, but if it's it's one of the bigger sites.
You may not be implemented at that stage, but say the Starbucks redevelops, and they say, okay, we've looked at...
We need to get things on record here. That's not... Yeah. If you're going to invite public testimony, then it's...
You could
direct a question to them.
Good point, yeah. Larry, I do want to hear... Go ahead and make your comment.
Well, so I've been struggling with this quite a while.
Could you give your name and address, please?
Larry Totally, 11201 Northeast 58th Street, Kirkland. 58th place, excuse me. Been struggling with it on these because these are the issues of the key of the major safety issues. Jeannie has talked about it many times. It's the driveway conflict points are critical to that. Closing off driveways, she suggested, is very important to help resolve those. But I go through the city's code, traffic impact study guidelines, and everything else. And that Starbucks keeps coming into my view. It's one of the worst locations for the safety issues. But the city's process right now, if that Starbucks site doubled its size, it would not trigger SEPA for a transportation perspective. It's only 2,500 square feet now. It's not going to be 12,000. So you only really have the access. So that's why I was pushing the planned access, the master access circulation plans. So what I've identified now would be something where they have to at least study it at some threshold. And then staff, and this has been done in other locations, where you can say, if right now you can go, but now if that other property next to you redevelops, you need to, we'll condition them to provide you shared access. So we can now close this driveway and get your access shared with theirs. That happens with gas stations in shopping centers all the time out here. People are trying to continue to reduce the number of curb cuts,
and the codes and the requirements the city has right now, is my professional opinion, wouldn't even allow you to go in and tell Starbucks, oh, really, we need to restrict your left turns into the site or out of the site here. And it's going to be very difficult. And Joel, you can tell me if you have a different theory on how you could actually even restrict certain turning movements, let alone then later on being able to take away a access because there's this big safety issue out here, and it's only going to get worse as traffic volumes and traffic congestion and operations issues get more significant over time.
Okay.
So that's where I'm coming from, and so I did put out the out here a thing is when development or redevelopment generates, and I just picked 30 trips because some jurisdictions use that as a peak hour threshold for concurrency or traffic impacts evaluation. So then they basically have to do a study that says, here's the different ways we can do it. We've talked to our neighbors of different options. Here's how it impacts safety for all travel modes. You know, leaving the driveway where it is, closing the driveway. How does that affect safety? Highway safety manual is a tool to use that. Traffic operations queuing impacts. Traffic queues at 68th currently block this some of these driveways. We still allow traffic to turn in and out of here. The impacts on adjacent intersections and streets. How does this affect the intersection 68th and 108? Yeah. By allowing that conflict point right there. Impacts on adjacent property and access and circulation.
Okay, Larry, rather than going too long, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, but now let's see.
Well, I guess just the bottom point was is that would then be used by the city to establish development conditions that could not only apply today, but somewhere down in the future.
Exactly.
And that's the key part. Yeah. The key part.
It sounds like, looking at your reaction, this isn't something you guys have done before.
What? I would say that there already currently our policy in the neighborhood plan that talks about a master plan, talks about sharing access, talks about trying to minimize curb cuts. You know, he's probably trying to take it a step further and make it more specific, but you do have a policy basis for that right now.
Right, but policy is one thing, and actually requiring it if there's redevelopment or there's, if there's, you set threshold, whatever the threshold is, then if it exceeds that threshold, they're required to do it.
We can tie it to the grocery store.
Could it be part of the whole design guidelines for this whole area? I mean, because that was part of the whole goal of the comprehensive planning of this area was the curb, you know, the driveways in and out. And so maybe that is a goal that's in part of the design guidelines that as you redevelop.
And so also currently we have pre-approved plans that include standards about driveway spacing, of which, you know, this does not, you know, meet those current standards. And
current standards for triggering
Starbucks?
Yeah, there's a number of driveways out there beyond Starbucks where, you know, we have spacing from an intersection, spacing from an adjacent driveway, those kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That we wouldn't allow today. And I, if say, the Starbucks site was to redevelop, it would be an opportunity for us to look at the safety and the operations of that and you know, and make adjustments. Now, once again, you know, the scale of that, we're challenged by, you know, kind of adjusting the, you know, the relationship between the scale of the improvement, you know, the development and what we can require. But we have the ability to look at that, even on a development of that size. And then, like currently right now, we have a couple of developments as it's a, up on Northeast 116th Street, a couple of large developments in the Totem Lake area where they're, you know, the developer is looking at a street extension, and we're trying to identify where that intersection comes in and cooperate with all the adjacent driveways and consolidate access and restrict access, and that's all stuff that's on the table there as well. And that's one that we're doing right now.
I also just noticed that it on page 5, we said we were going to include consolidated driveways into the design guidelines already.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know that's just one part of this, but that is something that we were going to include in the design guidelines.
Well, back to that, Joel, you had talked before about having something on the city plan that doesn't have a specific
date. So I think that that's another place where the plan for, say, Northeast 68th Street would another outcome of the 6th Street Corridor study is, you know, once again at a planning level, and it may not at this point be funded, but we would have a project that would be a, you know, Northeast 68th Street Improvement Project. Now, who funds that and all that kind of stuff? We can work that out later, but then it's on the plan. And as a consultant once told me, you know, plans come to money faster than money comes to plans, or the vice versa. It's like once you have a plan, it's much easier to, you know, start to cobble things together. And this is going to be challenging because especially if we're waiting for development, it'll be incremental. And so, you know, it's not going to be precise. But I think that we have some tools that we can use and, you know, to Larry's point, I think that, you know, we're kind of there's a continuum of, you know, how prescriptive do we want to be versus being opportunistic as things happen, and so that's I think what we're proposing is that we would be more based on our pre-approved plans and our standards and what would be represented in the 6th Street Corridor study, which is more kind of plan-based, we would use that as the tools to go out and try to identify opportunities as they come along. But, you know, access is something that's, it's much easier to do it when redevelopment happens.
Yeah, the whole point is making sure that it does. Yes. And the design review board, do they typically get involved with this sort of thing?
No.
I didn't think so.
No,
so
it's more of an administrative engineering.
Exactly. So I don't think putting it through design review really accomplishes what Larry's trying to. I would like to see, isn't there some way that we could, no, I think he's saying make it a requirement that if you are going to have any development X above X, then that plan has to be established. Doesn't mean you necessarily, as he said, doesn't mean that you may not do the things, but you get a plan in place so that before that development goes through, it has to be set up so that it will eventually fit into the long-term plan.
The one struggle with that is we don't know what the development on the sites are going to look like when we're, you know, we could be prescriptive about where those access points are, and that's one way to do it, but that's a further challenge for a developer that then comes along that basically we've kind of established their connection points, and they, you know, they like to be able to have some flexibility to work with the city to establish their site plans, and I would quite honestly rather not, get into a...
Yeah, I understand. I agree. Larry, I don't think...
just wanted... the city does identify stub roads for subdivisions and other types of stuff. I'm just trying to make sure we don't preclude some opportunities to do good work.
Yeah. Okay, well... I'm doing most of the talking. Does anybody else feel strongly about making it some sort of requirement at a certain threshold that there is some sort of a...
I think unless everything is developing together, it's going to be really hard to do those prescriptive things. But I think if there is, like you said, some guidelines already there's already, it sounds like a lot of tools that you would use to make sure that new development, and of course we would hope that they would jive up and cut down driveway things like that. I don't see how you could prescribe it if you don't know what's going to happen across the street in 10 years.
And I think the unintended consequence of, I like the idea, Joel, but I think the unintended consequence of allowing the development to sort of pick where they want to have happen is that they're making choices on, okay, the site next to me is not maybe not going to develop for a while, and their driveway is here, so if we were doing it together, our driveway should be here, but because I'm doing it and they're already there, I want my driveway over here, and we'll, they can worry about theirs later. And it might not be the best long-term place.
And that's the kind of trade-offs that we would be able to deal with if say, the Houghton side redevelops, but there's no, movement on the PCC side. We could have a prescriptive thing that says, well, our vision is the streets like a future 107th, so darn it, we're going to put it here. Well, it doesn't match up with either driveway on the other side, and if PCC doesn't redevelop for another 10 years, you've actually maybe made things worse.
Right, for 10 years.
Yeah. Or you could say, okay, well, we'll line up with their driveway here because those are the kinds of things that I think in this instance, given the small, we have attempted to kind of master plan some of the connections and I can't remember if those have really survived or not, the additional street connectivity that should help with circulation or, and we have established some of those concepts. And then our driveway spacing requirements that it's supposed to be 150 back feet from, the nearest driveway and things like that. It really does start to box them in.
Okay. So you feel like you got it covered?
Yeah, I think we can have it covered.
Some requirements.
As a planner, there are instances where there may be a time and a place where, I think with the first major redevelopment, we're going to be forced to do this to some degree.
So could we put that as a requirement, that any development over X does have to do this?
However we want to, if that's something that we wanted to write up.
we can do that. We can do that. I'm trying to decide if, I don't know. I mean, I was trying to think, so is this another thing to tie to the grocery store?
I was going to say, it was bigger than the Starbucks site, for example.
How do we choose the size? Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But we can do it.
But you do have policy basis already now for doing it.
You could base it off of one of the, I don't know what you'd call them, but the keystone sites. Mm-hmm. Like if one of these two sites... redevelops, then you do this.
Mm-hmm.
That is when you would do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. But do we have the teeth to be able? Do we need to have something in place that requires it?
That would be fair.
Something there.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you think put it in the zoning?
Yeah.
If we put it in the zoning,
good.
Yes, then we have the teeth.
Okay.
And so the planning commission has said don't include, and now we're saying we need to include. So.
Yeah.
With only for the keystone sites.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It sounds like you guys are generally supportive of that because it's when that's the time you want to do it.
Right.
Okay. And if we put it in the zoning, it's required. So.
And it would be something that I think that, the city and the developer would work together to do plan how, but look at it. The teeth would be. We need to work together to look beyond just that one site.
Right.
And meanwhile, if any smaller sites redevelop beforehand, you guys would still be...
You wouldn't
require something, but you'd still be trying to...
Yeah, you got to think about that anyway.
Do the best we could.
Right. Got it. Right. You guys in agreement with that?
Yeah.
Is that something we would stand firm on with the Planning Commission?
Well, I really, really like the idea of it all figured out. So... And on our side of the block, the three or four properties, they're all owned by the same family, so.
Right, but.
There's really only two properties that are going to affect it, right? PCC and the Houghton Market.
Those would be the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Menchie side is problematic, but without redevelopment, you know.
Yeah. It wouldn't be worth, I mean, you could brainstorm, but you wouldn't come up with anything that really.
Other than aggregating property.
Right.
Exactly.
And giving incentive to do that.
Okay. Back to the question, are we going to stand firm on that, or is that something that we'd like but we wouldn't veto?
I think the commission might, planning commission probably would be okay with this.
Be okay with that?
Yeah.
All right, we're standing firm. Let's go. I think we had agreement on all the rest of it. Hey, thanks for putting up with us, you guys, and for your able assistance.
I don't put up with you anymore.
Yeah. But according to my agenda, that's the end of the meeting. Unless somebody objects,
nope.
I'm going to say meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you for walking
Thank
us
you so
through
much.
All that. Thank
Paul's
you for everybody.
Thanks for
Paul's
keeping
met.
An upbeat attitude towards this. Upbeat attitude towards this.
Everybody.
Thanks for
Paul's
keeping
met.
A. Mm-hmm.